using free speech to free minds.
Shared vision of Silicon Valley as well as Wall Street investors for a metaverse. And we're going to talk about what that dystopian vision of the future is about coming up. Of course, we've talked about what the Great Reset is, and they are very adamant about what you will not have. You'll not have any private property. You'll not have meat. You'll not have the ability to travel, a whole bunch of other things. But what will you have? What will your life look like if these people are successful in their well-laid plans that have been in place for decades? So we're going to talk about that coming up. But first, the danger of collecting this information. We've got senators now wanting answers about Amazon's biometric data collection. Now, of course, it's not a problem if they're collecting data for their own use. It's a problem if a corporation is doing it. I think it's a problem for both sides, frankly. This is a bipartisan group of senators sent a letter to Amazon raising questions about the collection of biometric data. Amazon is bribing people to share their biometric information. You know, like people are being bribed to take a genetic code injection. They're offering a $10 credit at Amazon if you give up your biometric information. And so you've got Amy Klobuchar, Bill Cassidy, a Republican, and John Ossoff, a Democrat out of Georgia, saying, what's going on with this? Why are you doing this? This raises serious questions, they said, about Amazon's plans for this data and its respect for user privacy. This could be used for tracking purposes, which is exactly what I said about the Hyde system that was left behind. It raises real big issues about what they want to do with this. If you remember, I went through the slides yesterday, and one of the things that it showed there was, first they began, this is to stop terrorists and to identify them and so forth. But they go on to talk about how they want to use it for population control, for census. They wanted to do it to everybody. And when we look at what they're doing in Afghanistan, understand that one of the reasons, in my opinion, this is my opinion, but I've watched this for a long time, I think that these unending, unnecessary wars against people that we enter into preemptively against countries that have not attacked us, and we were not attacked by the Taliban on 9/11 or by Al-Qaeda. They don't even pretend that we were attacked by Taliban. They pretend that we were attacked by Al-Qaeda. Anyway, you know what I think about 9/11. It was an inside job. We were attacked by some people, probably have a zip code somewhere around the Washington area. But when we look at these wars, I think the real purpose of them ultimately is to test tactics and equipment. They're more than happy to waste money and waste lives to do that. Waste lives on our side as well. And so when we look at what they were doing in Afghanistan, I think they were planning for what they want to roll out here. And I think there's something much more draconian coming around than 3x5 cards that are printed up that you write the information down about somebody's vaccination status. They're putting that stuff out there. That's a preparation. We're being nudged into a dystopia. Remember that from Cass Sunstein? Nudge. How do we gradually move people in? You know, think of it as boiling the frogs gradually. And so we've had, you know, the lockdown for just a couple of days. Well, now we got to do it another month more. Now another 2 months more. Now another 6 months more. Oh, and by the way, we told you not to wear a mask. Now we're going to tell you to wear masks, and now we're going to force you to wear masks, and then we're going to use that as a placeholder and as a training piece to get you to get the vaccines, and then we will have to identify you, of course. This has all been thought out. And so when I talked about vaccine, ID papers a long time ago, before we were getting into the thick of it as we are right now, I was trying to explain to people the danger of it, and so we went back to history, to a Nazi analogy, and no, this is not an overreach. This is something that really happened. In the Netherlands, they were very keen on keeping information about everybody. It was just something that they, you know, let's keep this information. I don't know exactly what we'll do with it, but, you know, they didn't have a malicious purpose in it, but they kept a lot of information about people on 3x5 cards, just paper index cards. And when the Nazis came in, they realized, wait a minute, they could get this and not only find out where people are, but they get information about their political beliefs, about their religious beliefs. Today we call that geospatial intelligence. That has been the fastest growing area of the intelligence community since the late 1990s. That's where James Clapper rose to fame and hung out for the most part. And before they stopped having any conventions, they would have about 4,000 people a year go to these geospatial intelligence conventions. But it's, don't say anything at all about it. That's why when you know that that is the center of what they're working on as well. Just like for years, NSA stood for no such agency. They wouldn't even acknowledge that it existed. And even when you had parallel investigations in the Senate, you had the Church Committee that was looking at the CIA. In the House, you had the Pike Committee that was looking at the NSA. And nobody wanted to talk about the Pike hearing. That was completely spiked by mainstream media. As a matter of fact, when the NSA head went to the Pike Committee hearing, Pike said, I'd like to see your charter. They were created by executive order by Truman. And the NSA executive, our head, said, I'm not going to show it to you. See, they are the government. It's not these people that we elect. And it's been that way a long time. But what happened when in the Netherlands was that they had these 3x5 cards, and they tried to burn them as the Nazis were coming in. Nazis came in pretty quickly. And they found that they were packed so densely that they couldn't really burn them. It's like trying to light a log. And so the Nazis got those cards, and they were able to round people up very quickly with that, identifying them by that geospatial intelligence. Now, that information, we have the equivalent, and that story came out in the early 90s. I first read that because in the context, the people in the Netherlands still remembered that. And when they came up with tolls that were going to be a toll where you could just drive through and it'd be mapped to your tag or something else like that, people in the Netherlands at first said, we don't want to have that. We know what happens when the government keeps information on us, and we don't want you keeping information about where we're traveling. And that was very wise. But they've lost that wisdom, and we've lost that wisdom, and we think that it's innocuous. It doesn't really matter. And the only thing that we have to really be worried about is when those creepy corporations do it. And yeah, it is creepy when Bezos and these corporations do it. And we should understand how they work hand in glove with the government. Because that information that Amazon collects is going to be considered to be Amazon's information. Amazon will own that biometric information about you. And they will use it. They'll monetize it to sell it to other people. They will also give it to the government for favors. And quite frankly, I think that that is a much more valuable thing for Jeff Bezos than companies wanting to get the biometric information right now. If he has that biometric information, that gives him, he's always been somebody who's been very strategic in terms of getting influence in Washington. You know, he bought the Washington Post for $250 million, which was at the time, based on the amount of money that he was making just on stock appreciation for Amazon. I calculated it out as to how many hours he would have to work. And then it was basically about 3.5 days worth of work to buy the Washington Post for him. And so then I took that and I applied 3.5 days worth of work to somebody making the median family income of $50,000. Would you buy the Washington Post? I forget what the number was. But yeah, would you buy the Washington Post for a couple $100? Yeah, you probably would. So it was a no-brainer for him. And he got a lot of influence in Washington by having the Washington Post, because they can be very powerful in terms of building a politician up or tearing them down. And so I think that's really what he's after with this biometric information. But when you look at the HIDE system, again, that portable thing they put over people's faces, and they could get retinal scans and iris scans and a whole bunch of other things that were physical. They also had the capability of identifying people by psychological profiling and other things that were not physical, things like a voice print, things like the way you walk, all of that, even if you wear a burqa, you know, or a full head mask. And so we have Homeland Security considering, says the Wall Street Journal, outside firms to analyze social media after January the 6th failure. So not even pretending that social media is not about surveillance anymore. And I've talked about this for the longest time. I said, think about this. As soon as the internet got practical in the late 1990s, the bandwidth got up to a speed that made social media practical. They could see where this was headed. You immediately had all these different companies that are now ruling cyberspace. And they were all funded. There was a lot more companies that were funded by venture capital firms associated with the intelligence community. The CIA even openly created a venture capital firm called InQtel. The NSA and many other agencies had leaders on the venture capital boards deciding who was going to get money from them to be a competitor. They only let the people in to compete in the arena that were going to be people that were going to be compliant with them in the future. And then, of course, you wanted them to compete with others so that you had a much stronger winner through that competition. So there's real competition between these companies. But only the only people that were allowed to compete in this way were the ones that were already pre-approved puppets. Palantir is such a company. I mentioned them yesterday, how they went out and bought $50 million worth of gold bars because they're thinking of a black swan event coming. In other words, something very, very unusual. What would that be? We have a lot of different ideas of what that might be, and so do they. But Palantir has really made a lot of money by being a data analyst, mining data. I'm not talking about bitcoins. I'm talking about going through and looking at information that they're able to scrape about you off of social media. I mean, it's all out there. You've put it out there. And it was just a coincidence that Facebook, on the day that everybody was saying, you know, this LifeLog project that Homeland Security and these intelligence people are talking about, you know, keeping a log of everything about your life forever, that's really kind of creepy. We don't want the government doing that. And so they shut it down, and the next day you had Facebook created. Sure, it was just a coincidence. I'm absolutely sure it was just a coincidence because, you know, when you look at what is coming, when you look at the metaverse that we're going to get into here in a moment, it's now Zuckerberg who is right at the forefront of that. Just another coincidence. Yeah, because I'm a coincidence theorist, actually. It's just a coincidence. He just happens to have to be in the right place. He and Microsoft, right at the forefront of the metaverse, which tells you that you should take this very seriously. And it is a very serious dystopian vision for our society. But getting back to this, Homeland Security now wants to have outside firms analyze social media. They're not even pretending that they're not doing it anymore. That's the big difference. You know, when you look at the Snowden leaks, and I don't know about Ed Snowden, quite frankly. I've never really trusted him. And when I read his book, and when his book came out, I picked it up that afternoon. I stayed up all night reading it and kind of gave a book report the next day. It was not a very popular video. I mean, not because it was a book report. I tried to make it interesting. The facts that were there, I thought it was very interesting. His take, how he was portraying the CIA and these other agencies as heroic, stepping in the wake of 9/11 and all this other stuff. And so I said, he's a limited hangout. And that's what I've always thought about Ed Snowden, a limited hangout. And I think when we look at the Snowden leaks, they were limited hangout. They were there to get us accustomed to the idea that everything that we're doing is being watched because nothing ever happened. And I said when they came out that, to me, the revelations were just astounding. I thought people would rise up, just like I thought people would rise up against this pandemic when it happened 524 days ago, the lockdown began. I was, even with my low opinion of Trump, I seriously was surprised when he went ahead and did that. I knew he was malleable. I knew he was corrupt. I knew he was bought. But it's, and then I thought the people would push back against it. But they didn't. And they didn't push back against what Ed Snowden revealed. And so they just use it as a way to nudge us to wherever they want us to go. So now these outside firms are going to start analyzing this. As Wall Street Journal said, Department of Homeland Security is going to hire private companies to analyze public social media for warning signs of extremist violence. And they said this has spurred debate about America's declining civil liberties. Well, you're going to have a few people write some op-ed pieces about it. Maybe somebody will write a book, but absolutely nothing will be done by the government because it's exactly what they want. John Cohen, a top DHS official spearheading the project, he said, what we're talking about now is dramatically expanding our focus. This is the move against domestic terrorists, domestic extremists. In other words, what has always been called a political dissident. This is a move for them to come against enemies of the state. There was a Washington Post article last week about a guy, Philip Agri, I think is the way you pronounce his name, is A-G-R-E, Agri, I'm assuming, saying that in 1994 he predicted the dark side of the internet. And why did no one listen? Well, why is nobody listening now? Why is nobody listening in 2013 with Snowden stuff? Why did nobody listen in 2020 with a lockdown? The then UCLA humanities professor said that the data would be collected not by a single powerful Big Brother government, but by lots of entities for lots of different purposes. And he predicted that that would mean that people would willingly part with massive amounts of information about their most personal fears and desires. So we don't see social media for what it is. It is a giant Big Brother monitoring. Now, people are starting to see it now because it's being used to punish people based on things that they say on social media. People have lost their jobs, they've been kicked out of school, they've been arrested because of things that they've said on social media. But most people still don't see it as a Big Brother tool. And I've also said before that I believe that the reality TV shows like Big Brother that began in the 1990s, just as they were getting ready to roll out the internet. And remember, the internet was the brainchild of a DARPA psychologist back in the 1960s, J.C.R. Licklider. And it has elements of both argument from authority, the Milgram experiment, as well as peer pressure that we saw in the Ash experiment. So it is a big psychological move. And one of the things that they do to hide it from people is to make sure that the information is collected by a lot of different people for a lot of purposes, a lot of them innocuous. But now that that data is there, the government is now moving not just to punish people and censor them and kick them out of cyberspace, social media, but they'll be using it now to arrest us, those of us who are dissidents. So he predicted that it'd be used for a lot of different purposes, but it would become Big Brother. Genuinely worrisome developments can be seen as not so bad, simply because they lack the overt horrors of Orwell's dystopia, he wrote 30 years ago. This was a guy who was trained in math, computer science, but he was also interested in other disciplines. He actually got kind of angry that his family had channeled him in that particular venue. And as he started to look at the industry, he looked at it with a combination of somebody who understood it from the inside, but also had an outsider's viewpoint. Something that I've talked about for a long time that I've seen in engineering, and that is people who have absolutely no concern about how the thing that they're creating is ultimately going to be used. To them, it's simply an intellectual puzzle to be solved. And they never consider the consequences or the downside or whether there are any restrictions on how to be used on the downside. A data industrial complex that knows no borders and few laws is what he described. Data collected by disparate ad networks and mobile apps for myriad purposes is being used to sway elections. Now, is what Washington Post said, and they're right about that. He foresaw the authoritarian misuse of facial recognition technology. He predicted our inability to resist well-crafted disinformation, such as we've seen with now Washington Post will say, see, that's about the questioning whether the election was honest or not. Now, what we've seen, well-crafted disinformation this last year, is the full pandemic. It's been a pandemic, a psyop of disinformation. He foretold that artificial intelligence would be put to dark uses if not subjected to moral and philosophical inquiry. And that's where he's wrong. I mean, we're not going to, philosophical inquiry, we're not going to do anything about this. It's going to have to, since we no longer have Christian values that are informing what we would do with things. That's why we don't have any of these checks or balances that the founders put in. We had a Christian society. We had Christian morality. We had a Christian understanding of the fallen nature of man. That's why they created the checks and balances. That's why. I think it was Madison who said, men were perfect, we wouldn't need government. But because men are not perfect, we need to be very careful. I'm paraphrasing him, and I think it was Madison. We need to be very careful about what we allow government to do. Those kinds of understanding about fallen human nature are not there in non-Christian religions or in secular humanism. You'll hear people say, well, we're basically all good. Do you seriously believe that? Do you seriously believe that? How could you believe that? Seriously. Anyway, Agra is not available. In 2009, he disappeared. He's not dead. They sent the police out looking for him, and they found him. The people who were concerned about him, the police came back and said, yeah, he's here. He just doesn't want anybody to know where he is. Think about that. 12 years ago, he saw what was coming, and it's like, I'm going to become anonymous. I'm getting out of here, because he really did see what was coming. In the early 90s, he came to believe that the field of artificial intelligence had gone astray and that a lack of criticism for the profession was one of the main reasons. In those early days of AI, most people were focused on complex math problems and automating human tasks. But now, today, since they've ignored criticism, what they're doing is they are scanning and analyzing our behavior, categorizing us, predicting, it's called anticipatory intelligence, predicting what you're going to do. And that's basically where Palantir hangs out. That's what they do. And now you're going to have, even though this has been done, now they're going to openly do it, and they're going to openly direct it towards their political enemies. They've just been building this up for a while. In a 1994 paper, a year before the launch of Yahoo, Amazon, and eBay. He said he foresaw that computers could facilitate the mass collection of data on everything in society, that people would overlook the privacy concerns, because rather than Big Brother, it would be many different entities collecting the data for a lot of different purposes. Some good, some problematic. More profoundly, though, Agri wrote in the paper that the mass collection of data would change and simplify human behavior to make it easier to quantify. That has happened on a scale that few people could have imagined, as social media and other online networks have corralled human interactions into easily quantifiable metrics, such as being friends or not, liking or not, a follower or someone who is not following. In 2001, he wrote, quote, "Your face is not a barcode," arguing against the use of facial recognition in public places. He predicted that if the technology continued to develop in the West, it would eventually be adopted elsewhere, allowing, for instance, the Chinese government to track everyone inside its country within 20 years. And, of course, they did a little bit faster. And, again, I want to point out that this technology originated in the United States. All this technology that we see being put to authoritarian, totalitarian, dystopian use in China for social credit system, that was designed and built in America. They just copied it or were given it in order to run a beta test on it. And so it's a given that that's coming here. And we knew it was coming here. And that's why I said, when I saw these people collapsing in the street and stuff, I was like, I don't think that that's necessarily... this COVID thing is necessarily real. I suspect that the real danger is what they want to impose on us. And I further said, even if it is real, even if it was designed as a bioweapon, even if it was deliberately released as a bioweapon, the worst thing we could do would be to do everything that President Trump did last year, to lock us down. So he was writing for an audience as of the benighted, and the benighted were unable to understand what he was saying. He got frustrated. He disappeared. He was frustrated that there wasn't more of an uptake on this. But one person who knows his work said, people who are a generation ahead of themselves are always a generation ahead of themselves. He's resurfaced from time to time, according to a former colleague, but he's not been seen for years. Several years ago, former colleagues at UCLA attempted to put together a collection of his work, and then he has resurfaced and said, stop it. This perhaps ought to be our attitude towards towards all this. That would be the wise thing to do. I'm not wise in that regard. I'm annoyed. I'm too annoyed to do the smart thing. I've been for a while. So where is this going? The metaverse. And if you've seen the movie, the Steven Spielberg movie, Ready Player One, you know exactly what this looks like. A dystopian future where everybody is poor, society is violent. It's just this ugly hovel that's out there. As a matter of fact, Travis, pull up a couple of clips, should have told you, of Ready Player One, just some screenshots of what it looks like for the people who haven't seen it. And the guy lives in kind of a, you know, a little tiny micro apartment, little metal can type of thing. And he's got, but he's got VR. And he's got like a running track that lets him be able to travel and so forth in the virtual reality. And he escapes to that. But prior to Ready Player One, there was another novel, which I'm not familiar with, but it was the one that really kind of laid the whole thing out. And this novel that was seminal in all this, it laid out the terms of metaverse, laid out the terms avatar. And these are now being adopted very rapidly, as I just pointed out, by Facebook and by Microsoft. But Silicon Valley venture capitalists, Wall Street money, they're all into this in a very big way. As Vice reported, a big shift is apparently underway in Silicon Valley. The company that operates the world's largest, most profitable social media network, Facebook, says, according to Zuckerberg, the CEO, they will not be a social media company much longer. It inspired a fervid wave of speculation, analysis, and mockery, but Zuckerberg proclaimed that Facebook is going to become a metaverse company. Facebook will pivot from being a website that's accessed via phones and laptops to a next-generation computing platform where the focus is on the user's presence that is accessed through virtual reality. You know, Facebook bought the Oculus headset, the Oculus company. They were one of the first ones to come out with a VR headset, so they bought that early on. They have other products like Portal. And he says this is going to happen in the next 5 years or so. In other words, he expects this to be fully implemented by 2030 for the Great Reset. Zuckerberg told The Verge, quote, we will effectively transition from people seeing us primarily as being a social media company to being a metaverse company. And it's not just Zuckerberg, it's the CEO of Microsoft saying the same thing. His aim is to build an enterprise metaverse. And as The Verge points out, it's not just Microsoft and Facebook. It'd be troubling enough if it were, because those are the two that are most connected to DARPA and the deep state. Microsoft always, at the beginning of all these different programs. If you look at PRISM, which I believe, we can't prove it, but I believe that it was a Palantir program. They did have a program called PRISM. But it's all very secret. And yet, if you look at those slides that came out as part of the data release from the Snowden leak, you see that Microsoft was the very first company to get in. And they had a chart there showing when these big corporations joined the PRISM program. The PRISM program that Palantir has, of course, is about geospatial intelligence. mining all your personal information. And over the years, the very last company to get in was Apple, and that didn't happen until Steve Jobs was out of the way because he was somewhat reluctant and resistant to, certainly for these Silicon Valley CEOs, he resisted being affiliated with Washington. But after he was out of the way and they put Tim Cook in, that was when they joined into the program. But it's not just Microsoft. It's not just Facebook. As Verge points out, it's Silicon Valley's investor class. It's cheerleading pundits. It's influential founders. All of them hyping the metaverse. The CEO of Epic Games that runs Fortnite has for years been promoting the metaverse as a fast-arriving future. And the founder of another gaming platform, Roblox, wrote a piece about it in January for Wired. He said, the metaverse is arguably a big shift, as big a shift in online communication as a telephone or the internet. And you can think about it as the successor to the mobile internet. And you're seeing articles from Wired to The Economist to Time Magazine to InvestorPlace.com to Verizon's news centers. All of them have the same headline. The metaverse is coming. And then they'll all say also, and it's a very big deal, they add. But it is a very based on a very dystopian novel, Neal Stephenson's 1992 novel, Snow Crash, which has the same kind of world that you see in Ready Player One. A deeply, as Vice puts it, a deeply dystopian novel about a collapsed America that is overrun by violence and poverty. The dystopian context of mass poverty and violence, one where an immersive, shared, 3D digital environment where anything goes offers most people's only opportunity to escape from an intolerable reality. And that was the thing that you saw in Ready Player One. In Ready Player One, it was a question as to whether or not people were escaping into that virtual reality because the actual reality was so horrible. Or was the actual reality so horrible because people escaped from it and just hung out there? Open question, isn't it? The hero of Snow Crash is named Hiro, by the way, H-I-R-O, as in Japanese. And he is a gig worker, delivery driver, who moonlights as a hacker. He lives in abject poverty in a 20 by 30 storage unit that he shares with an alcoholic roommate. Just happens to be 20-30. Just a coincidence, I'm sure. Hiro spends a lot of time in the metaverse. He beats, he says it beats the crap out of You Store It. The U.S., as we know it, has ceased to exist. Corporate entities and organized crime control whole city-states. And why am I going into this detail? Because this is the world that Facebook and Microsoft and Silicon Valley and Wall Street Journal and all of the mainstream media publications want for you. Workers like Hiro can be killed for taking too long to deliver a pizza. And they're driven into the metaverse underworld to find extra legal work and enough money to make ends meet. The only reasonably safe places in the physical world are heavily fortressed burb claves, in other words, fortified suburban enclaves, where the wealthy reside behind batteries of guns and gated communities. The metaverse, which users access through VR goggles, is a kind of 3D digital environment familiar to people who use video games today. The metaverse's real estate is developed along the street, a huge virtual thoroughfare that encircles thousands of miles of its digital world. There are no rules. There are no set objectives. Users select an avatar, and again, Stephenson in this novel, Snow Crash, he coined both the term metaverse as well as avatar for these types of uses. Avatar had been around before, but he used it in its current use. What do people build in the metaverse? Like any place in reality, the street is subject to development, wrote Stephenson in his novel. Developers can build their own streets. Feeding off of the main one, they can build buildings, parks, signs, as well as things that do not exist in reality, such as vast, hovering overhead light shows. The metaverse itself is a place that is addictive, violent, and an enabler of our worst impulses. Finally, as Verge points out, it should be noted that there's an entire class of people that they call gargoyles because they just sit there all day in VR. They've completely dropped out of reality, even to the extent that being permanently plugged in and wearing these headsets all the time, they become actually physically permanently disfigured. And a kind of a screen addiction. In the world of Snow Crash, the metaverse is not viewed as cool, but necessary, because the real world has become so unbearable. Do you see what they're doing? This is the plan. We look at what they are doing, what they propose to do with the UN 2030 agenda. It's the same thing that Davos is talking about with the Great Reset. And we look at this and say, how in the world can they take away everything from us? They can take away our ability to travel and lock us up in the cities. They can take away our individual homes and put us in little storage sheds. They can take away even our ability to eat meat and natural food. How can they do that? How can they limit us, take away our jobs, and put us on welfare? You've seen it happen pretty quickly this last year with Trump's executive orders financing that. And they want to lock that down because people are starting to get antsy about this already. How do they keep you pacified? Well, there's ways that they keep you pacified. Universal basic income, or as we saw, the stimulus checks, then the extended unemployment benefits, plus another occasional stimulus check, then getting us back into universal basic income that was mocked when it was advocated by Andrew Yang and Occasional Cortex just a couple of years ago. Trillions of dollars to pay people for not working? When Bloomberg said the point of it is so that in this fourth industrial revolution, people don't grab guillotines and come after us. They've always talked about that. As I've mentioned before, and by 2030 in South Korea, and this is about 4 years ago now, they predicted that 70% of doctors and lawyers would be unemployed because of artificial intelligence, because of robotics, because of nanotechnology and genetics. And so they have to find some way to keep us occupied while they soft kill us. So universal basic income, the metaverse, where you can escape into a very realistic simulation and spend your time there because the world that they have put you in is so horrific. And then a dystopian, draconian crackdown to make sure that you don't go anywhere, meet with anybody outside of their portals where they can watch everything that you're doing. So this lockdown that we've had this last year with the Zoom meetings and Zoom school and all the rest of that, Zoom churches, that's so that they can force you into their cyberspace where they can control and watch everything that you do. This is the next level. It's just a continuum. But this is really kind of the end point here, where they control you, where they pacify you, while they soft kill you with their vaccines. Do population control in that sense. First they physically control you, then they do population control by reducing the population. So all these different elements of Snow Crash were also picked up in Ready Player One. As a matter of fact, Ready Player One in Facebook's Oculus division was required reading for new employees, because this is their goal. This is the world that they want you to live in. One person comments and says, the metaverse was never a fantasy about virtual reality. It was a fantasy about power. And that's why these Silicon Valley executives have bought into this. These people are drunk with power. They're addicted to power and money. You've never seen, the world has never seen anybody with the kind of global power and wealth that these people in Silicon Valley have. And in my opinion, it is absolutely demonic what they have been given, what they've been enabled to do. Facebook is openly talking about how the first part of this will be that your workplace will be virtual reality. That's how they'll get you, because you'll have to do it in order to work. And of course, we don't want to have any face-to-face contact with anybody because of the so-called pandemic. And the pandemic is never going to go away. It will never go away. You know that, right? You know that They're going to go from one variant to the other. There'll always be a new narrative coming out from mainstream media. Be afraid. Be very afraid. Don't go out. Don't shake hands. Don't meet with people personally, physically. Go through the portholes that we control. And so if you want a job, they're going to make it extremely difficult for you, if not impossible. Facebook has launched the open beta for what they call the new Horizon Workrooms app. It runs on their next generation Oculus, the Oculus Quest 2 virtual reality headset. They launched it this last week. Software is designed to operate as a virtual workplace, allowing colleagues to work remotely to wear headsets, allowing them to see and interact with digital avatars of each other as if they were in the same room. Forever afraid of physical contact. Horizon Workrooms allow users to make digital representations of themselves using the avatar creation system. And by the way, this all flows into all of this transgender fantasy world as well. Because they made a big deal in these novels, Ready Player One and so forth, that you could have somebody who is a middle-aged man and his avatar is a young girl. All these different types of things, right? So in the world that he lives, he can be a girl, and vice versa. Those avatars are placed in a 3D animated virtual workspace where virtual meetings and conversations can take place. Bosworth, the vice president of the Facebook Reality Labs, said in a press briefing, "You are actually in the demo. We've been talking about the future of work for a long time. The pandemic hitting in the last 18 months has given us greater confidence in this technology." You see that? They're demoing it through the pandemic. The pandemic is beginning of a beta test, but it's also, it's just really fortunate. It's just very lucky that they had all this stuff, just like it was lucky that they shut down LifeLog the day before Facebook opened up. It's just amazing how lucky, how coincidental the rise of Zuckerberg has been. I mean, look at this guy. Yeah, maybe I'm misunderestimating him, as Bush would say. But this, he does not strike me as, certainly he doesn't have any social graces, but he doesn't strike me as being somebody that's very intelligent. But of course, there's different types of intelligence. He's smart enough to know how to ally himself with the right people. So maybe he's not necessarily intelligent. Maybe he's just cunning. Zuckerberg sat down with employees in June to tell them that the future was going to be the metaverse, that they would strive to build a maximalist, interconnected set of experiences known as the metaverse. Bosworth, the guy who is going to be in charge of that, says the metaverse is already here as a collection of digital worlds. Today, Portal and Oculus can teleport you to a room with another person, regardless of physical distance. But to achieve our vision of the metaverse, we also need to build the connective tissue between these spaces so that you can remove the limitations of physics and move between them with the same ease as moving from one room of your home to the next. Now, as all this is happening, we see yesterday the headline from Breitbart, Facebook caves and bans accounts identified by the White House. He didn't cave. He was always set up to do this. Facebook caves. Give me a break. It has always been set up for these people that have been given the keys to cyberspace. They've always been there as the people to roll this out. And again, it's a very detailed plan. It's a detailed plan that even extends beyond the humans that are implementing it. This is why it all just dovetails together. Hackers steal over $600 million in one of the biggest crypto heists ever. About $611 million are drained from a platform, Polynetwork. And Polynetwork was upset about that, and they said this. They said, well, you took so much money that now you're going to have everybody in the world coming after you. In other words, if you come in and just steal like a million, but I guess whatever the number is, if you go to $611 million, you're going to have everybody coming after you. Same type of thing that we saw happen the last few months. with some of these hackers. They said in an open letter, Poly Network that was ripped off for $611 million. So the amount of money that you hacked is the biggest in DeFi law enforcement in any country, in DeFi history. That's a decentralized finance. Law enforcement in any country will regard this as a major economic crime, and you will be pursued. In other words, they will hunt you down. So as a result, the hackers then came back, and they embedded a message into Poly Network in a cryptocurrency transaction Wednesday, said, we're ready to return the money. So that's kind of interesting. And already they said they've gotten back $5 million in cryptocurrency. It's still a long ways to go. But just understand where this is headed. This is headed into a central bank cryptocurrency. They're going to engineer a crisis, just as we've had engineered crises to destroy the dollars linked to gold by both Nixon and FDR. This is very well documented. And Crisis and Leviathan by Robert Higgs. I suggest that as suggested reading if you want to know more about that. Also, we have, as we move into teaching and what is happening in our families, the left right now thinks that none of this stuff is going to happen to them, that they're just fine. But the reality is that if we make all of this dystopian plans a reality, it's going to hit everybody on both sides. Some people are smart enough to see that. Some people on the left, like Glenn Greenwood, Greenfield, I keep calling him Greenwood, people like Matt Taibbi, even people like Bill Maher, starting to see, you know what, we don't want to live in a world where there's no free speech and freedom, where the shifting winds of politics can land anybody in jail if you have a divergent opinion. Here's an example. A Utah teacher is no longer employed at high school after a video of her sharing her political opinions began circulating online. Now, the video was taken surreptitiously, says AP, by somebody in the class. It shows a teacher criticizing people who choose not to get the vaccine against COVID. I don't have to be happy about the fact, she said, that there's kids coming in here with their variants that could possibly get me or my family sick. That's rude, and I'm not going to pretend that it's not. Well, her position is ignorant, and I'm not going to pretend that it's not. And we'll talk more about that in terms of variants. How do you know about that? As I've said for the longest time, there's absolutely no way that they're doing any tests for these so-called variants. They're not doing DNA tests on people. These are clinical diagnoses, just like we had at the beginning of this thing. Well, it's not the flu. It's COVID. It's not COVID. It's the Delta variant. It's pure fantasy. But here's a better example. A socialist publication has fired its staff for actually doing socialism. On August the 8th, the editor-in-chief, Nathan J. Robinson, author of Why You Should Be a Socialist, unilaterally fired most of the workforce at the socialist magazine Current Affairs. He wanted to avoid an organizational restructuring that would limit his own personal power. Yes, we were fired by the editor-in-chief of a socialist magazine for trying to start a worker co-op. Because, see, that's how socialism works. Socialism is just a pretense for power, for some animal on Animal Farm to get absolute power. They talk about the brotherhood of man, from each according to his ability to each according to his need. But eventually, everybody turns everything over to Napoleon. And he kicks everybody else out. In terms of 5G, we've just had a historic win this last week. Actually, the court case came out on Friday last week, the 13th. And then there was a press conference by Children's Health Defense, .org, talking about how they'd won a case against the FCC on safety guidelines for 5G and wireless. And what they pointed out was in 1996, the health and safety guidelines that were put out for cell phones as they were laying this the basis for that aspect of the world that we live in now. As the internet was being laid, you also had the legal foundations being laid for the cell phone networks, and they're trying to piggyback 5G on that as well. In 1986, you had Fauci give the big pharmaceutical companies legal immunity from any damage that they did with their vaccines. And then 10 years later, in 1996, the FCC gave legal protection to the cell phone companies, denying any concerns about health issues regarding antenna clusters or placement of antennas. That was in 1996, the Telecommunications Act. They said if a jurisdiction has concerns about an antenna cluster that are aesthetic, then they can pursue that. You know, we can make you put up some pretty structures if it's a historic area or something like that, and they don't want to see these antennas out there. We'll make an accommodation, and they'll have to disguise it somehow. But if you're just concerned about health, we don't care about that. We're not going to allow that to be considered and get in the way of our telecommunications network. Now, subsequent to that, and this, again, I'll mention this because it underscores how important it is for us to act locally. We've had a lot of test cases and a lot of court cases where you've had cancer clusters when these cell phone antenna clusters are put in close proximity to schools, for example, because these things show up faster in children. I think it's one of the reasons why children are the last ones to be added to this Trump pandemic shot. And so in these areas where they had the kids were essentially canaries in the coal mine, they have a faster metabolism. And so they're exposed to this stuff as they're developing, and it shows up much more quickly. So you had cancer clusters. People would sue them in court. The court would throw it out. But even though there's a federal law, the Telecommunications Act, you still had some jurisdictions in New York, California, other places like that, where they would ban this stuff. So even if the courts don't do anything, even if there is a federal mandate to leave them alone, where the rubber meets the road is in the local community. And I still stand by that. I know as we had the discussion with Joel Skousen yesterday, he was somewhat skeptical about that aspect of it. There is really no political solution to what we have right now. There are things that we can do. There's things that we must do. And things that we can do that may have a big effect on this. You know, God ordains means that are practical for these things, and we should not reject those by any means whatsoever. However, so ultimately it comes down to God. It comes down to our relationship to God. But one of the things I think that we can do from a practical standpoint that are the most important are the things that we do at a local level. And this is just yet another example of this. They won the historic case against the FCC, a case that challenged the agency's decision to not review 1996 health and safety guidelines regarding wireless-based technologies, including 5G. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit published its decision August the 13th. The court ruled that the FCC failed to consider non-cancer evidence regarding adverse health effects of wireless technology when it decided that its 1996 radio frequency emission guidelines to protect the public's health. The court's decision, said RFK Jr., who was lead counsel in it, exposes the FCC and the FDA as captive agencies that have abandoned their duty to protect public health in favor of a single-minded crusade to increase telecom industry profits. Oh, that is exactly what we're seeing. And we're seeing it everywhere. That's why it's so important what he's doing. And let me give you an example of this. At the same time, they're telling everybody, don't worry about 5G. If you talk about 5G health concerns, you're just a paranoid conspiracy theorist. And yet, we continue to see article after article after article about the Havana syndrome. So at the same time this is coming out, the same time people are poo-pooing that, we see at least two U.S. officials in Germany now have developed symptoms of the mysterious Havana syndrome that has plagued American spies and diplomats around the world, says a report. This is RF electromagnetic attacks. That's what it is. Physical attacks. And I'll say again, if you go back and you look at this, how can anybody be so ignorant and foolish not to realize the electromagnetic energy messes with our health? Just take a look at a microwave oven, for example. And again, that started because you had some radar technicians who realized that when they put their coffee cup on top of the radar equipment, that the EMF was heating up the coffee. The very first microwave oven was called a radar range. Why do you think that was? You had the Fry effect, Alan Fry, who worked for the Navy. And a similar thing happened there. Instead of it heating it up, they were using a different frequency. That frequency, rather than heating up and cooking, you know, you can cook yourself from the inside out with microwave. But instead of, we're not talking about cancer again, you know, that's the only thing the FCC wanted to look at. They didn't want to look at any other biological issues. But Alan Fry had an assistant who was working on some equipment that was at a different frequency, and he started hearing clicking noises. And they documented that he was hearing those clicking noises because of the electromagnetic radiation that he was absorbing in that frequency. They call it the Fry effect. It's very well documented. And yet, with a Fry effect, with microwave effects, microwave oven effects, these people still want to tell us that we're crazy conspiracy theorists if we say that these things affect us physically. The only thing they want to look at are tumors. And so we've also seen very good indication that if you use the phone frequently, that it greatly increases your risk of brain tumors. And you can see when you do brain scans how it affects you if you're holding the phone next to your head. But again, when it comes to 5G, that's supposed to be some kind of a magic new frequency that doesn't have any harm whatsoever. Absolute nonsense. They just don't know what the effects are going to be. That's one of the things, like these injections. It's a brand new frequency that you're being exposed to, and they're not testing for it, just like they did with these injections. And, of course, big cheerleader of 5G, Donald Trump, pushing it everywhere. Got to do it faster. Can't wait. We can't wait for any health issues. Got to get it rolled out. Why? Because it is their method of control. There's a lot of things involved. It corporate profits, just like the big pharmaceutical industries and these injections, as well as their ability to monitor and to control the population. That's why they're sweeping aside anybody's concerns about health or privacy, dismissing them as paranoid and delusional. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about education. Stay with us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
All right, as I was saying, I had a listener who sent me some additional information about the the biometric devices, the portal, the BAT, that they left a lot of these behind in Afghanistan, part of the HIIDE system. And this listener said, with regards to today's show, that would be yesterday's show, he said, the database on the HIDE system does not have to be accessed through a portal if the HIDE system has not been purged or zeroed out. There could be several thousand people on each system's internal database with physical addresses, religious orientation, family demographics, and associations, etc. The internal system is a Windows operating system. The username and password is always the same and is conveniently indicated on the manual located inside the storage bag of every device that it is required to be placed inside of. The reason these three items are always together is, strangely enough, due to the military's requirement for every soldier to remain 100% accountable for their equipment at all times. I wonder if these soldiers are receiving any statements of charges for their missing equipment and subsequently being charged for them. This is something we see on an ongoing basis. You know, those signs, those electronic signs that are on the side of the road. And you've probably seen in years past, there was a whole rash of these things about 5 to 10 years ago. And it still happens occasionally. They get these signs on the side of the road. They're portable. And they ship them with a default password code, like 000, something like that. And if somebody knows that, they can go up to this device and they can reprogram it. That's why you see these signs occasionally popping up on the media. Warning, zombie outbreak ahead. Right there. You knew where I was going, Travis. That's zombies ahead or whatever. They're able to do that because the people don't change the passwords. But what the listener is saying is, you know, these are Windows systems and everybody's got the same password, and they even put the password there in the bag where it's to be kept. So if they got these things, let me tell you, it's a lot more complicated to fly a helicopter, as they were able to do. And I'm sure those guys had had some training in flying helicopters. You don't just grab one of those things and take off the first time. But that's a lot more complicated, specialized, than being able to take this thing out of the bag. And here's the username and password to use to get in there. And then you just start exploring through it to find exactly what I was talking about at the beginning of the program. It's like getting a big 3x5, a big drawer of 3x5 cards. It's got all the information on everybody for the Nazis to go round them up. And so now the Taliban is going to do that because the American military left all that stuff behind. Mandatory vaccine to keep my job in education, writes a listener. Said, I live in Washington State, and Governor Inslee has now said that everybody working in education must have the bioweapon injection by October the 18th. I refuse to take the shot. I have a master's in teaching, and I have now no job, so what can I do? I want to help children. Middle school English is what I teach, but how can I make enough money and not work in this disgusting and broken public school system? Many of the private schools are following suit. If you have the time, I'd appreciate your advice. Well, I don't know exactly, but what I would suggest if I was in your position is I would start offering myself as a tutor. And I would start by going to, you could put up ads on social media, other places. You have a specialty of being able to teach high school English. That is something that is in short supply right now. As you can see from the people graduating, as you can see from some of the articles coming up, the illiteracy, the inability to speak is now just being written off by a lot of schools. And as that becomes apparent, people are going to be looking for teachers. So I would suggest you could talk to homeschooling cooperatives. You could put stuff on social media. Look, we need teachers. What we don't need is the educational institutions that the government is running, or necessarily even private schools. You know, there's this article I have here from Reason Magazine, written by a teacher who did class outside. He says, this last year at a university, he says, if class outside was good enough for Plato, it's good enough in a pandemic. To which I would add, if homeschool was good enough for most of the founding fathers and for basically all of society at that time that was highly, highly literate, unlike our current society, most of the people could read and did read. And so instead of a school system where you have the school systems where they have the highest per capita spending on education, like Washington, D.C. and New York City, where they have the highest illiteracy rates. I mean, their graduating classes are just, they're inversely proportional to the way things were in colonial America. You have a literacy rate of about 90% in colonial America. You have an illiteracy rate of these high school graduates in these urban school systems of about the same percentage. But that's illiterate, not literate. And so if homeschooling and tutoring were good enough for the people who had the wisdom to create the system that we've now abandoned, if it was good enough for the Wright brothers, you know, they were homeschooled bicycle mechanics, and you had Langley, that they named Langley Air Force Base after, and so forth. He was the Fauci of his day. He was head of the Smithsonian Institute. Everybody respected. He was one of these worshipped scholastic authorities, and yet he couldn't get things to work because he would not question the establishment. Being somebody who was a product of scholasticism, he rejected basic science, empiricism. And so he just took the lift tables that somebody else had done incorrectly and continued on with them, whereas the Wright brothers generated their own lift tables. And the Wright brothers looked at how birds flew, the airlines modeled that. They looked at God's design, and they tried to copy that as closely as they could. So you got some homeschooling bicycle mechanics were able to do what the preeminent scientist of the day could not do. And so his point in all of this, he says, you know, this is something that was done in Athens. Outdoors is where Plato taught. It was a grove outside of Athens. Aristotle did the same thing. Aristotle would not only teach outside, but the mode of instruction at the time of Plato and Aristotle was not necessarily just to go out and sit in a grove and talk, but a lot of times Aristotle would teach people and they would just go on a walk and they would be talking. Jesus taught the same way. It's called peripatetic instruction, walking along the way. That was actually something that's very common. That's why you see that in Deuteronomy 6, an admonition to parents. As you're in the way, as you're walking in the way, you talked and instruct your children. It's what we called our, we had to give our homeschool a name in North Carolina. And so I called it the Peripatus Academy because it was peripatetic instruction. We'd put them in the car, take them with us because we had a business where we had to be on the go between multiple locations, and we'd do a lot of, we didn't do so much homeschooling as we did car schooling. We joked about that. we had a friend of ours, and I don't know if it was confusion or derision, who said, your school, what is it, the Pair of Potatoes Academy? But it worked. There's a lot of different ways that you can do this. And so what he did was at James Madison University, James Madison, one of those people who got all of his education at home. He was wealthy. He had tutors, but, you know, other people didn't. They still educated at home. It's very rare for people to have schools. It's one of the things that Jefferson was very keen on doing in Virginia. Unfortunately, I don't think he saw the where this is all headed. But with government schools, not a good thing. It was a blind spot for him because he valued education. But this guy was at James Madison University's instructor. He said, I use the Central Quadrangle in Harrisonburg, Virginia. And he said, my students, as a result of this, being outside, getting fresh air, not having masks on and so forth, they earned better grades last year than ever before. And the ones who showed up in person scored a letter grade higher on average than the ones who took advantage of my Zoom simulcast. Unfortunately, many professors routinely dismiss outdoor teaching by claiming it's too hot or it's too cold. When we had classes in 90-degree heat, we'd sit under a tree and we'd sip ice water. My uncle was a forestry professor. He's head of the forestry department, University of Missouri in Columbia, Missouri. And we lived in Florida. And so it was hard for me to imagine places that could get that cold in the winter. But as a forestry professor, they would do peripatetic instruction. They'd have to go out to where the trees were, which is outdoors. You couldn't do indoor labs, and so they would take them out in the middle of the winter. I remember him writing, it got so cold that nobody's pens would write, so he just, all right, today we'll do something else when their pens froze up. But they would go out there and do that. See, you got to think outside the box. They put us in a box in so many different areas, and there's absolutely no reason why we should continue to do schooling and education the way that we've done it. There's a lot of different opportunities out there. And so I just say to the listener who's an English teacher, your service is very badly needed. And I've said this from the very beginning, as I've always opposed schools. I opposed schools when I was a student. I opposed them as a parent. And now I oppose them as a former teacher myself. So, but education is needed, but it's not the same as schools. And they have succeeded over the years in equating those two things to each other. So we've got to break that trap that they have, that box that they've put us into. And you need to break that as a teacher as well. I've said for the longest time, if we reorganize the schools or get rid of them entirely, we're still going to need to have education, and we're still going to need teachers, and we're going to need good teachers. And there's a lot of ways that you can do that. I would suggest that you might even put together your own classes. There's some master classes that are being done by people who are good. But I think probably your best option is going to be doing tutoring or working with some homeschool cooperatives in terms of tutoring like that. I wish you luck. But we need to reconstruct a parallel society. And that's going to be a very important part of it. People who are getting kicked out because of medical professionals who are being dictated by politicians and bean-counting accountants and other people who are just looking at the financial incentives to force people to get vaccinated, telling healthcare professionals, you've got to get vaccinated. We don't care what you think. We don't care about your individual liberty, and we reject your medical judgment as well. We're going to force you to get vaccinated. We're going to force you out. Those of us who do not want to be a part of this coming dystopian society that's being rapidly forced upon us are looking for teachers. We're looking for medical professionals that don't want to be a part of that system either. And so then the question becomes, how do we connect with each other? And that's the problem, because we have gotten so accustomed to connecting with each other online that it's difficult for us to connect in person, and they're trying to make that intentionally difficult. But if there's a will, there's a way. To give you an example of why this is so necessary, we have Oregon suspending the need for high school graduates to be proficient in reading, writing, and math. See? Right there. And so I say this to people. This has been the case for a long time. People who were afraid to do homeschooling, I would always tell them, you can't do worse than the schools. And the schools don't do any proficiency testing on homeschool students because they don't do any proficiency testing on their own kids, or they would they constantly reject that. And now they have rejected it in total. This is by Jonathan Turley. He said, this week, as more schools move to end standardized testing, a move that can guarantee that nobody fails in their schools. It's like Lake Wobegon. They're all above average, right? Except I guess we could say that's Lake Woe Education Be Gone, because that's what's going to happen if you don't have any testing. Oregon has found a simpler approach. Governor Kate Brown just signed a bill last month that drops any proficiency requirement in reading, writing, or math before graduation. There you go. No longer a problem. See? It's all solved. And he quotes from the bill, quote, Section 3, a student may not be required to show proficiency in essential learning skills as a condition of receiving a high school diploma. But they still call them essential learning skills. We have reached the Wizard of Oz finale stage here, where the Grand Poobah Wizard just hands you a Doctor of Thinkology medal and you misrecite the Pythagorean theorem. Upon reception. This is where we are. You need to pull back that curtain and show the fraud involved in all of this. This move was supported by, ironically, an organization that calls itself Foundations for Better Oregon. They wanted to change the requirement to reflect that every student needs to thrive in the 21st century, they said. And as Jonathan Turley points out, that appears not to include proficiency in being able to read, write, and do simple math. And, of course, that is exactly right. He doesn't understand. That's the point. Charlotte Iserby, Phyllis Schlafly, talking about the deliberate dumbing down of America. Charlotte Iserby's book, talking about the Department of Education, how that was the goal, even back during the Reagan administration. I mean, that Department of Education was not even 4 years old. Reagan campaigned on getting rid of the Department of Education, saying the federal government should not be defining standards. It shouldn't be doing anything. And yet, how did they use the Department of Education? The same way that Trump did 524 days ago with this Great Reset. He incentivized it financially. That's what the Department of Education does. It pours out money. It rewards and punishes people with money. And it sets standards. Just as Fauci was setting the standards. This is the preferred way that government, the federal government, works. Setting standards, and then this is what we'd like you to do, and here is the money if you do it. And the money that you're currently getting, we'll take that away from you if you don't do this new thing. And so they don't care if people read or write or do simple math. As a matter of fact, they don't want you to do that, and they certainly don't want you to do critical thinking. What they want you to be skilled in is regurgitating their carefully crafted racism, the critical racism theory, and these other Marxist things, and to be contemplating your navel, not your genitals, when you determine what sex you are. So that's what they want to focus you on. They don't want you thinking. They don't want you to have the tools of learning. And see, this is going back to Dorothy Sayer, the basic tools of learning. When we used to say that you're going to get a liberal education, it didn't mean that you're going to be a Marxist or a socialist. What it meant at the time was that liberal meant to be liberated. So you would have the tools of education. You'd have the ability to read, write, do math, and to think critically. And those would be tools that would liberate you to pursue your lifelong education. It wasn't going to be something, the view of education was not that we're going to stuff a bunch of stuff into your head. It was to give you tools to learn. So I said, we have to get kids to reach a level of bare proficiency and establish that ability with an objective test. If you have proficiency in writing or reading, you should be able to write or read a standardized test, says Jonathan Turley. Well, that's exactly right. You know, the purpose of a test, and just think about this. The real purpose of a test, now for a teacher, you know, the purpose of a test can be to determine whether or not you know anything. But it has another purpose as well, and that is to show the student whether or not they know anything. Because, unfortunately, students tend to think a lot, way too highly of what they know, what they're capable of doing. And so a test can be a humiliating thing, a humbling thing, and rightfully so. You know, when we look at the test that we go through in life that God gives us, it isn't because God doesn't know what we know. It isn't because God doesn't know what we're capable of doing. It's really to show us what we're not capable of doing and what we don't know. And so it has a dual purpose. We're going to be putting kids out that are, again, schooled in racism and LGBT perversions, but they won't know anything at all. But they will believe that they know everything. They'll believe they know everything. So, along those lines, Biden has put out his back-to-school video by the Department of Justice asking these kids who know everything and who know better than their parents, telling them that if you get any hassles about this, any of this transgender stuff, we are here ready to sue on your behalf. The Department of Education and the Department of Justice. And they even pulled in this guy, Rachel Levine, the man who dresses up like a woman, Assistant Secretary for Health. And he said, President Biden sent an unequivocal message to the transgender community. To all transgender Americans watching from home, especially the young people, I want you to know that your president has your back, Levine said. And he said, and I want you to know that I have your back, too. And I want Levine to know that I don't want him standing behind me. I don't trust him at all. And I don't want him standing anywhere close to any of my kids or grandkids. Yeah, they are ready to litigate. Roger Cerevino, a senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, said back-to-school messages should be about seeking and learning truth, not pushing unscientific ideologies that hurt children and take away parents' rights. But I've been telling people for decades that if you understand the foundations of our educational system, going back to Thomas Mann, going back to Horace Mann and to Thomas Dewey, if you understand what these guys were about, they were open about the fact that they were doing social engineering. They were not giving you the tools of learning to think independently. They had a way that they wanted you to think and act, and they were going to push you in that direction. It was set up as social engineering. It was not set up to educate people. That's why there's been such a big disconnect. Parents keep looking at this and thinking, it's a broken system, and I think I can fix it. The system is not broken. The system is working perfectly fine. It's doing exactly what it was designed to do when it teaches a 16-19 program and CRT and LGBT agenda. That's what it was designed to do. It's brave new schools. They're working exactly the way they were designed by the people who designed them and the people who are operating them. They're doing perfectly fine. They do not want you messing with them. It's a well-oiled machine. And if you want to see what the product is, take a look at the streets of Portland and Seattle. You have a former LGBT-identifying women and men are slamming Netflix documentary called Pray Away. They're slamming it as an attack on Christianity. This is from LifeSite News. Now, this is the network that gave us the foreign film Cuties or something. Who was, you know, they had child prostitutes, pedophile thing. This is not Netflix. This is Demon Flix, if you don't know what these people are about. And they've doubled down on that with other pedophile things as well. And so they've put out a documentary called Pray Away. And the purpose of it is to discredit any therapy that would help people who do not want to be living in the homosexual lifestyle to get away from that. And there's two ways that you can look at that. One of them is as psychological therapy. The other one is as Christian conversion. And so they want to make fun of both of them, but really kind of focusing on Christian conversion. As LifeSite News says, they undermine and impugn the testimonies of legions of men and women who have left homosexual lives behind and who continue to experience freedom in Christ. Pray Away comes at a time when the number of people who formerly identified as homosexual or transgender is on the rise and is becoming increasingly visible in the public square via the Changed Movement and Freedom Marches, which have been held across major cities across the United States. One person who is a director of Christian counseling in California, they call it Genesis Christian Counseling, said, I was first struck by the misleading nature of the title, Pray Away. I don't recall anybody telling anyone that if you're dealing with same-sex attractions, just go home and pray them away. Well, I think you probably would have a better I think you'd probably have a better success record if you did do that. Quite frankly, I'm sure that they're presenting it in a negative way. But pray away is going to be the first thing you do with any kind of problem you got in your life. You got an alcohol addiction, you got a sex addiction, you got a gambling addiction. Whatever you're struggling with, prayer ought to be the first thing that you do. Especially, you know, we talk about Christian counseling, and look, God has ordained a lot of different means for us to work with each other. One of the reasons that we have churches is so that we can offer a lot of support and counseling to each other, so we can hold each other accountable and things like that. And so there is a big advantage of people holding you accountable around you, and that is one of the means that God has ordained. But don't ever underestimate the supernatural power of conversion. If you haven't had that experience, then you need to seek that. You need to pray pray for that, basically. He says, we've had sponsored conferences for decades to help people, to help equip people to deal with their sexual feelings. So it's quite a misrepresentation to say that we are simply offering the advice, pray away. Well, I do hope that prayer is a part of their Christian counseling, because that really, you know, we have the people that we're against, as they like to remind us, they have F-15s, and they have nuclear weapons, and they have MREPs, and they have all these other things. We have different things. We have what are called in the Bible mighty weapons. Principal among those are prayer. You want to see the wheels come off all those things? You want to see them crash and burn? We have mighty weapons for that. So God is the one who heals. He may be pleased to use any number of means for that, but he is the one who ultimately heals. And as I saw this article, I got a couple of emails from pastors. And let me give you the testimony of one pastor. It's Pastor Joseph. He says, I was an atheist, and I was falsely accused of rape, facing 45 years to double life in prison by a woman that I lived with. I was going to commit suicide in jail, but I cried out to Jesus. I repented of my sins, and I got filled with the Holy Spirit. I got my GED in prison, and upon release, graduated from college as a licensed optician. I got married and started a church. We own our own small optical business, and we never closed down church or optical business the entire time of this pandemic. We never forced masks. We never did temperature checks, either in our business or our church. We're not a 501c3, and we chose not to be that. I have been a pastor for 10 years, and I've never been paid for that, and I do not get paid for that. My wife and I used our own finance to pay for the building. When we refused to close down our church, people left. We are now 20 people in our church. Well, I'll just say this. You were always 20 strong. And now you got 20 strong Christians there. The other people left. They went out from among him, in my opinion, to show they never were of him. Anyway, he said, we took over an old Masonic temple. We gutted it out, turned it into Strongsville Christian Church, built and founded in 2020. As a licensed optician, pastor, and critical thinker, I saw the lies and exaggeration of COVID-19. The hospitals were never overrun, as they said. I personally know more people who died from the vaccination than COVID. And I actually do not know anybody who died from COVID. I know several people who died from vaccination. It's Pastor Joseph Kalenny, and I'll say that because he put all that information in there, and I'm sure he's not afraid to have his name out there. This is also from another pastor, a bivocational pastor of a small church in New Mexico. He said, we never closed our church. We never changed anything at all during lockdown. None of us ever got sick. See, that's why they're on the churches. As I said so many times, these churches that have been open up, it's very rare. They will zone in on a church where somebody gets sick or somebody that's elderly dies from pneumonia or something like that. Say, see? But they'll completely avoid, you know, the 7,000 people that are meeting in L.A., in defiance of all those rules on a weekly basis with a very elderly demographic. They'll completely ignore that there. I mean, that is the thing. As much as L.A. tried to shut down John MacArthur's church there and all the fines that they put against them, and those fines were held in escrow, and they're going to get those things back now. They're going to have a big cash bonus that's going to come out at the end of this. Because you notice how they've gone quiet on all of this stuff. You can't find any. LA's just decided now. First, they decided they were going to punish them out of existence. After they had been doing this for months, it's like, oh, you're going to kill everybody here. Well, obviously not. They didn't kill anybody inside their church. And so then after they challenged them with that and they couldn't succeed there, they just kind of now, well, let's not even talk about that anymore. But getting back to this pastor, he says, they didn't have anybody get sick the entire year. Our governor gave the lockdown order less than 24 hours before Easter Sunday last year, 2020. Tell me that timing wasn't purposeful, he said. That's exactly right. Yeah, I mentioned that last year as well. Well, we did change how we parked at one point, with some people volunteering to park blocks away in order to help us fly under the radar of the state cops. Good for you. You said you interviewed my friend Jason Garwood the other day about the Warrington Declaration, and I recommend that to anybody who is struggling with wondering where legal authority is, you know, what true authority in the church is. WarringtonDeclaration.com. That's spelled WarrenTon. WarringtonDeclaration.com. It's got two parts. The first part is, what does the Bible say about legitimate authority? What is legitimate authority? Not just power, but legitimate authority. The second part is, and what does that look like with all these medical mandates? How does that fit? Anyway, he said, I interviewed his friend, Jason Garwood, about the Warrington Declaration. He and I have worked together on a couple of different projects. I made one or two minor editorial suggestions and was an initial signer of it. He said, like scores of others, my wife is being faced with the vax or test dilemma at work. She has decided to do neither. She told her employer that since the jab doesn't do anything to prevent the spread, to only test the unvaccinated is unscientific. You either test everyone or no one. To only test her can be nothing other than a form of punishment for noncompliance. That's exactly what it is. She's decided not to agree with him, that this punishing power is legitimately theirs. And let me just say, in terms of it being a punishment, I've mentioned this a couple of times, and I think I need to stress it more. When you look at that punishing thing of sticking that swab up somebody's nose, and we've had more than one video looking closely at the tip of that swab and saying, this is not at all like a cotton swab. What's up with this? It's got like all these prickles and stuff, and you rub it across a piece of meat, and they all stick in the meat, and they stay. What's the purpose of this? Is that purpose of that to punish you, to create a nasal irritation or something like that, to jab that way up into your nose? And not only that, but it's absolutely unnecessary. You can do a PCR test and get the information with saliva. With saliva. You don't have to stick anything up somebody's nose, let alone this swab that leaves behind spikes. When the Cannes Film Festival was beginning, they obliquely talked about that as well. Hollywood degenerates that were going there to watch these disgusting films, and I made the comment at the time. They said, well, in order to come in here, we have to do this test where we have to spit. They have to do this disgusting test where we have to spit into this thing. And I said, well, that's not nearly as disgusting as the movies are going to be screening. And it turned out to be very true. I mean, look at the movie that won. It's absolutely unbelievable. I mean, they're into cannibalism and ritual killing. I mean, it is just pure Satanism. But those celebrities coming in, even though France required that they be tested, they didn't require them to get the spike up their nose. They let them do the spit test. And with that, they could do the PCR information. These swabs are not necessary at all. If you really wanted to test people, you could do it with a spit. And it makes no sense whatsoever to test somebody if they're not symptomatic. You can't spread it if you're asymptomatic. And the only purpose of a PCR test, said Kerry Mullins, who won the Nobel Prize for doing it, the only purpose of that is to determine when somebody is sick, to determine what kind of virus they have. But even that doesn't tell you what variant it is. That would require a DNA test. All of this stuff is just nonsense. It's not science at all. No matter how many times they chant science, 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 it's not science. It's not even logical. It's not even consistent. So yes, it was designed simply to punish. Simply to punish. And, you know, going back to Cannes, as soon as the festival was over, that was when Macron started releasing his rules about, well, we're going to start phasing in vaccine mandates and passports and all this other kind of stuff. But he waited until after Cannes was shut down. And he didn't subject these elitists, his fellow Satanists, to the swab to come in. Anyway, the pastor continues on here. He says, at my day job, I'll be facing the same thing shortly unless the Lord does a miracle. I used to think that maybe I could hang on for a while doing weekly tests, but my wife has convinced me that to do so is to live by lies, as Brother Alexander, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, warned us not to do. I have to draw the line somewhere. He says, we feel like, you know what? This is really where we're going to go, then let's just go there. All you tyrants, you want to do what you think you need to do, do what you think you need to do, because we're done playing along. We're okay with letting those chips fall where they may, because our Christ owns all the chips and the cards and the table, and we'll be fine. Just bring it already. But see, they're not going to do that, because this is a nudging. They're doing this gradually. They're boiling the frogs gradually. And it's very clear, that's what they have to do. And that's why I've said from the very beginning, the difference between the Republican and Democrat governors is what the Republican governors know their people will put up with. That's the only reason they're going any slower. They're all on the same page. They just don't want to push us too far, too fast. But they're pushing us pretty fast. And we're going along with it like a bunch of sheep. So anyway, he said, this is Pastor Gordon Runyon, Emmanuel Baptist Church in New Mexico. And thank you for the letter. Important letter. In Poland, they're not going to be pushed by the EU into the LGBT agenda. Like Hungary, they have both said, we're not doing anything to discriminate or to punish to discriminate against or to punish people who are LGBT. But you're not going to push that stuff on our kids. You're going to stay away from kids. It's not appropriate. And they're absolutely right. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, 20 or 30 years ago, that we realized that even normal sex was not appropriate for very young kids. And that was what the fight used to be. We had schools who were trying to push normal sex education on kids, because what they wanted was to get to this point here. They wanted the Brave New School. I was even surprised when I was in school that they had us read Brave New World. It's like, this is kind of pornographic. This free sex to control people and to and drugs, you know, don't give a damn, take a gram of Soma and all this other kind of stuff. And I said, I don't think you're really pushing this to tell people that this is a bad thing. I think you're trying to normalize it. I think I was right. Even in high school, I knew that. Numerous local authorities in Poland have declared themselves to be free of LGBT ideology. This is Set Poland, and they put that in quotes from Reuters to say that it was LGBT ideology. Is it not an ideology? It is. It's a religion. It's a very intolerant religion. It is a worldview. This has set Poland on a collision course with the European Commission. The southern Malopolska region said that it had received a warning letter saying that it could lose more than 2.5 billion euros, that's nearly $3 billion, of EU funds unless it revokes the declaration made in 2019 by mid-September. They've given them a deadline. They're going to start punishing them economically. Just see, the EU is setting itself up to act exactly like Washington has. You know, we've got a European Union central bank, and we can print the EU, the currency now, and we can print as much of it as we want, and we'll give you all this monopoly money that you can imagine if you just do what we say. Turn your kids over to the LGBT. They've even put out videos bragging about it. Yeah, you're right about one thing. We're going to take your kids, and there's nothing you can do about it. And there is nothing that you can do about it if you put them in their schools. They said, we cannot simply deny what was said in 2019, said a council leader, Jan Duda, father of Poland's president. We need to meet, and we need to rewrite this declaration as the one from 2019 has been misunderstood. It's not clear from this article whether he is retracting that or not. But they said religious conservatives in Poland say they do not have anything against gay people, but they oppose what they call, quote-unquote, LGBT ideology, which they say poses a threat to Christian values. It's not their opinion. It's reality. I mean, they are at war with Christian values, with Christian doctrine, and they will not tolerate it. This is not a situation where, you know, well, we got consenting adults or adults who can do whatever they want. No. They do not want you to tolerate what they do. They demand that you celebrate what they do, and they demand that you do not do anything other than what they do. But you must celebrate what they do. You must bow the knee before their golden calf. Nothing else is acceptable to them. LGBT-free zones seek to ban the promotion of homosexuality and other minority sexual identities in schools. In schools. And then, in case you think, well, of course, we know that it is happening here in America. America is kind of the epicenter of all of this stuff. But I saw this several days ago, and I didn't think it was real. I thought it was a parody. But this is actually real. LifeSite identified the person who's doing it. She is a queer neurodivergent teacher, is how she refers to herself. She has a website called Co-Creation, K-O-E, Creation. She uses third-person plural pronouns. She describes herself as non-binary. She's an author and activist whose straight-faced Amazon biography says she was raised in a sex-positive, polyamorous family, whatever that is. It means many loves, if you look at the roots, I guess. Well, loving everybody, right? But not just in a platonic sense, I'm sure. Subsequent communities in Seattle, and she has a, quote, decades worth of experience at being a, quote, professional pervert. She describes herself as a professional pervert. So here's what was going around. And again, when I saw this, I thought, nah, I'm not falling for that. That's too over the top to even be real. This has got to be a parody. But it's not.
Story time. This has been my first year in preschool with a class of my own, teaching alongside another queer neurodivergent educator, and we have been rocking our two's class. We've been talking about gender and skin color and consent and empathy and our bodies and autonomy. It's been fabulous. But our teaching team is shifting, and a new person is being onboarded, someone with many years of experience. So today at the lunch table, when the topic of gender and genitals came up, one of our students plainly looked up and said, well, I'm a girl today, but I know that teacher Co isn't. No, they're NB. And the look on the incoming teacher's face was priceless. She was shocked in a good way, and she just looked around at the two of us and said, this class is incredible, and I am so impressed.
Okay, as Robbie Starbuck, who is running for office, says, this nut could end up being your child's teacher, and you wouldn't even find out the craziness they're teaching until your kid tells you about it. Did you hear what she was saying? At the lunch table, and this is a lunch table with students, the topic of gender and genitals came up. Call me old-fashioned, but we never had those topics come up at the lunch table. Certainly not in mixed company. but just unbelievable. And she says, well, I'm a girl today, but I know the teacher Co isn't. No, they're NB, is what she said. That means non-binary. I'll have to translate that for anybody that's normal out there. According to her website, she, again, promotes polyamorous relationships, and she discusses sexuality with small children. And she's given talks promoting the social acceptance of radical sexual ideology and behavior at Stanford, at University of Washington Medical School, and at Pacific Lutheran University. On her site, she says she employs her, quote, unique knowledge as a second-generation queer spawn to provide prospective parents and families a framework for successful cross-generational communication about their identities and relationships. That's what's happening in the schools today. If you have any more questions about homeschool, please do email me. I'll try to do my best to answer them. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children.
They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com. Yes, we're going to get into some more information about the booster shots, about the vaccines, about America being held hostage, the masks, the rest of this stuff. But before we do, real quickly, I want to get into Afghanistan with a quick update here. We have President Trump, the former president, by the way. He says that he's a former president, even though we've got some people out there saying, no, he still is a president. Well, actually, no, he's not. So we're not going to get into litigating that. Again, as I said, was it corrupt? Yes, it was corrupt. Has every election in my entire life been corrupt? Yes. Was this the most corrupt election that I've seen in my lifetime? Yes. Did President Trump lay the groundwork for that corruption? You better believe he did. If anybody's to blame for it, it's Trump. And so now he's out here casting aspersions on Biden about Afghanistan. And certainly Biden is to blame for the chaos that he has invited in this. And this statement by President Trump is exactly right. He says, first, he says, you bring out the American citizens. This is how I would do it if, I don't know, if I'd been president for something. Okay. if Trump had been president, this is what he would have done. First, you bring out all the American citizens, then you bring out all the equipment, then you bomb the bases into smithereens, and then you bring out the military. You might want to get the military out of the bases first, but maybe he didn't think about that. He says you don't do it in reverse order like Biden and our woke generals did. No chaos, no death, and they wouldn't even know that we left. Just like Bagram, except they left everything behind. I would just say that's a great plan, President Trump. It's too bad you didn't execute on anything that you said before you were president. It's too bad you didn't execute on anything that you're saying now after you're not president anymore. You want to talk about a completely useless talking head, and that's Trump. Never did a thing that he knew he should do. He knew it, and he wouldn't do it. That's his epithet. Biden says the troops will stay in Afghanistan until all Americans are out, except that the Pentagon does not know how many Americans are still in Afghanistan or how many have been evacuated. They say they've taken out 7,000 so far, but they don't know how many of them are Americans, and they don't know how many Americans are left, and they don't know where they are. And they said in the press conference that I played for you yesterday that, no, we're not going to go looking for them either. And if they call us, we're not going to go pick them up. As Joel Skousen pointed out yesterday, you have other countries that are doing that. They get a call from their citizens, and they go out with a convoy of MRAPs and other things like that, and they go pick them up. But Americans aren't going to do that. U.S. promises not to charge Americans to fly them out of Afghanistan after there was a report that they did, that they charged people $2,000 or more to get out. Yeah, that's what we can expect from our own government. Meanwhile, an Afghan Christian says the whole world has abandoned us. You want to talk about who's been abandoned? It's not just the Americans, it's the Christians who've been abandoned. And that was the thing when I was putting the report together yesterday that just absolutely astounded me, but did not surprise me, really. Because I had seen how this had worked out in Iraq, for example. In Iraq, there had been an active Christian community even under Saddam Hussein, until we went there. And after we went there, they were wiped out. And so in Afghanistan, where we've been for 20 years, the Christians were already persecuted more than in any other country other than North Korea. That's what life for Christians looks like under the American military. It looks like having their community wiped out in Iraq. It looks like becoming as bad as the worst country other than North Korea under our own military. And I talked about yesterday the confiscation of Bibles and things like that. I didn't mention the personal story that made me even look for those articles. I had a friend, and I use it in past tense. He went to West Point. He was in the Pentagon. He left as a colonel, and we reestablished contact in the early 2000s, post 9/11, after he was retired, and he knew that I was the business that I had. I'd done my own website at the time. I hate website development. I'm not good at it, but you know, I have done it in the past. And he contacted me and said that he and some other retired military were looking at a contract proposal coming out of the Pentagram, and they were going to be running a news service for domestic consumption in Afghanistan. And you know, I wouldn't have anything to do with the content, but I would be doing the website. It wasn't anything that I wanted to do. I didn't want to do websites, period, but I also didn't want to really be involved in that. But, you know, to help him and to possibly help somebody else that I knew that was a homeschooling Christian who had a business where they did, they had some very large websites that they did for some very large customers. And so I thought, well, you know, to help these guys out, I'll ask this other guy if he's interested in this. And when I told him, I was not aware at the time that they had gone around confiscating Bibles and made a big deal out of it. But those stories that I read yesterday, that was happening at the time, and I had not heard that. And so this other guy said, if that's what the military is doing in Afghanistan, if they're going to be persecuting Christians in the military, I'm not doing anything for those people. And so I called back my friend. I said, well, he's not interested. And and he said, I'll never forget. He said, does he not love our country? And so then at that point, I gave him the real reason. And yeah, he loves our country, but our country doesn't love Christians, does it? And you can see that here in America, can't you? You want to know what's going to happen in America? Just take a look at Iraq and Afghanistan under American military rule. This Christian says, we are not able to control our emotions because we've worked so hard for 20 years. All of our work over the last 20 years has been lost overnight. The Christian man whose voice cracked at times throughout his message said the video was being put together as his testimony. We want it to be remembered by our friends and loved ones that today we have been left in the field by ourselves. Our beautiful country has now been destroyed by this savage and extremist group. Only God understands how broken our hearts are. The whole world has abandoned us. Those who said they would support us have now abandoned us to the worst situation imaginable. I don't know what is going to happen to us, but we are not leaving the field. We will fight harder, and we will continue in God's work, and if we are no longer with you, remember this word from our unbroken hearts. Mark Morris, who leads a Christian ministry of refugees, two refugees out of Memphis, Tennessee, said he learned over the weekend that a pastor in Afghanistan received a letter from the Taliban that I reported yesterday. We know who you are, we know what you do, and we know where to find you. And of course, we know what they do to people who are Christians. For men, it's beheading. For women, it's typically life in prison. Meanwhile, to these people, we've now turned over the newest toys, not just the biometric identifiers and the data that's inside of them, but they've got planes, guns, night vision goggles. It is, as Reuters puts it, a U.S.-made war chest. Lots of new toys. They've seized 40 aircraft, thousands of armored vehicles and guns, reports the DOD. But just like the Americans left behind, the military has no plans on going and getting that either, or destroying it. And we have now learned that around 24 State Department officials at the U.S. Embassy in Kabul warned of a potential collapse in Afghanistan. They made it clear to Secretary of State Anthony Blinken. In total, 23 U.S. Embassy staffers, all Americans, signed a July 13th cable, which was given a rush status. Given the circumstances on the ground in Kabul, they said, we have called for the State Department to use tougher language in describing the atrocities being committed by the Taliban. The administration has been warned by its own officials on the ground that the Taliban's advance is imminent, that the Afghanistan military may be unable to stop it. And this was something that, again, has been developing for quite some time, and it was very clear last year, which is why Trump and Pompeo did that agreement with the Taliban. But again, why would they do that and then not execute on it? Right? Trump knew what to do. Pompeo knew what to do. They did that agreement, but they pushed it off to the next administration as Trump was laying the groundwork to make sure that he lost. Because of the mail-in election, everybody knew he was going to lose. The Afghan ex-president says the Taliban has laptops full of secret government intelligence. Now, that's the other shoe to drop. There are a lot of reports about how they have picked up laptops, and now the U.S. is desperate about the secrets that are going to be there. Some cybersecurity experts are saying that the information that's going to be there is going to make the Snowden leaks look like nothing. And, of course, this is not a limited hangout. This is something that has just been handed over to the Taliban, as the Afghan president is warning us. He says, yeah, they've got laptops full of classified information. AOC is going to go to Afghanistan. She's going to warn refugees not to come to oppressive, racist America. Yeah, this is the Babylon Bee, yes. But if she wanted to be of service, she could do that, but of course she isn't going to do that. The predicted Afghan refugee numbers are exploding. Do you think it's going to be 30,000, 50,000, 80,000? No, no, no. We don't know exactly what kind of number that is going to be. And what we do know is that they're not going to vet any of the people who come in. They're not going to vet them for any kind of extremism or being a member of a terrorist group. They're not going to vet them for that. They're not going to vet them for any disease because, you know, as we go to the vaccine wars in this country, we don't have to worry about anybody coming across the border from Mexico or anybody being flown in by the U.S. military from Afghanistan. We don't need to have an ID for them, but you better have a full vaccine passport. You better be all shot up and everything. If you want to go get groceries as an American, if you want to travel on a plane, you're going to have a vaccine coming up shortly. If you come into this country from any place other than Afghanistan, it doesn't matter if you test positive or test negative, you're still going to have that vaccine now. And that's just a precursor to making sure that nobody flies and goes anywhere without the government's permission. That's what this is really about. This is not about a pandemic, of course. Because as they admit, and they have to admit, because now we're seeing that the injection itself is really what is causing these problems. They can try to pretend that it's a variant. They can try to pretend that it's just a breakthrough, that these people don't have as serious a case as other people, and on and on. But we know, because they keep telling us, that it doesn't do anything in terms of having a lower viral load. So in terms of spreading this around, your vaccination status makes absolutely no difference whatsoever. And yet they will continue to press for this lockdown requiring vaccines, you know, to protect other people, even though it doesn't protect other people. They're going to continue to require that. Let's take a look at the boosters, for example. I've got a letter from a listener, Andrew. It says, one of my employees and athletes, Anthony Pike, brought up this point, which is so plain, maybe people have not thought of it. The vaccine cards have two extra slots for extra doses. It's almost like they knew they'd be pushing these booster shots. Do you think? Do you think? I think they did know. I think they also knew, you know, we were told when they put these forms out, and I reported last August, they had prepared them and sent them out to three different states and one city. And then, you know, by October, they sent them out to all 50 of the states. And when you looked at that, it had all kinds of personal information, everything to identify you, everything. And then they said they had to do that. It was necessary because they had to give you two shots. And they wanted to make sure that when you, that you first of all got a notification so that you came back exactly on 30 days and that they gave you the same kind of vaccine. So they didn't mix them. You know, you get a Pfizer, then you got to get the second shot as a Pfizer. If you got Moderna, the second shot had to be Moderna. Now they're just mixing and matching them and they don't care. It was all a dodge. I said at the time, I said, if you look at what is on this form, the key field here that tells you what this is all about is the one field that says refused, because this is going to be put out by healthcare providers. And this information was to be reported back to the CDC. The instructions on all this stuff were sent it back here. So they don't need to have all this information in a central repository, and they don't need to know who refused, because they don't need to be giving you a call for a second one. That showed what it was about. But now you look at these vaccine cards that they've got now, and they've got slots in there for additional doses. They knew they were going to do this from the very beginning, but now Trump is pretending otherwise. Trump is coming out, and he says, that sounds to me like a money-making operation for Pfizer, these boosters. Oh, really? Well, you know, it takes a big pharmaceutical salesman to know one, doesn't it? It takes somebody who has given them tens of billions of dollars to say, I think they're going to make tens of billions of dollars on these follow-ups, too. He says, sounds like a money-making operation for Pfizer.
Show me the money!
Yeah, it does sound like it, doesn't it?
Show me the money!
Trump says, I could see the dollar signs in the eyes of that guy that runs Pfizer. Yeah, well, I could see the betrayal in what Trump was saying then. This is just as amazing to me and as ridiculous as this statement about, well, you know, if I had been president, this is what I would have done about Afghanistan. I would have taken these people out first and that. What a joke this guy is. I had somebody send me an email saying that Alex spent the entire show yesterday talking about this. See, Trump is on our side. He's a good guy. He understands that this is not necessary and it's all about money. You wouldn't say that last year, would you, Alex? No, because last year it was about...
Show me the money!
For you, wasn't it? Show me the money. I can make a lot of money pushing this guy Trump. Audience equals money. Trump equals audience. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe he didn't spend the whole show. I don't know. I didn't watch it. I didn't even watch Alex when I worked for him. Certainly not interested in watching him now. But anyway, he's out there saying, sounds like a money-making operation. The recommendation for a booster shot reflects heightened concern over the highly contagious Delta variant and the data showing initial immunity wanes over time, said the Wall Street Journal. Trump, as LifeSite News points out, finally says, Trump has often praised and taken credit for the COVID-19 vaccines. Having launched Operation Warp Speed as president, he touted the rushed approval given to these vaccines during his 2020 campaign and afterwards. He has no remorse about what he has done to people. None whatsoever. But then he does say, you know, hey, how good a business is that? You get an extra shot, he says. If you're a pure businessman, you say, you know what? Let's give them another shot. That's another $10 billion of money coming in. The whole thing is crazy, said Trump. You are such a corrupt liar, Trump. I mean, he's made sure that these companies are making $20 to $30 billion each after he gave them tens of billions of dollars to develop it, delivered their product for them, held them harmless worldwide for anything that's happening to them. And now he has the audacity to say, well, these booster shots is just about the money. It's just about another $10 billion after he's turned over. Pfizer's looking at over $30 billion, just that one company alone. Moderna, between $10 and $20 billion. And this lying shill for pharmaceutical companies, you know, he was, you want to talk about money? Yeah, you know, Trump, why don't you show us the money? RFK Jr. pointed out, how everybody got freaked out. I think it was in December of 2016 as they were coming up to the Trump administration. Remember, there was talk that RFK Jr. Might head up a committee that was going to take a look at the effects of vaccines. He'd been an outspoken opponent of it all along. Trump had been an outspoken opponent of it. And so people like Alex Jones are saying, well, you know, it's possible that he, I think he's going to come in and he's going to blow the lid wide open on this stuff. And look at that. He's meeting with RFK Jr. When that happened, RFK Jr. said, there was a big, big pushback from the pharmaceutical companies. He said, I never saw him again, but I've heard that there was a big donation made by the pharmaceutical industry to the Trump coffers campaign. And right after that, he picked as the head of Health and Human Services, Alex Azar, who was then CEO of Eli Lilly, one of the big pharmaceutical companies, very politically connected. So, yeah, Trump, why don't you show me the money? He's worse than a pharmaceutical salesman. He is a charlatan. And the people like Alex who are pushing him are a bunch of drug pushers covering this stuff up. It's okay to talk about how dangerous the vaccine is. I'm glad that he does. But he wouldn't talk about it last year, would he? Never tie it to Trump. When Trump comes out with something ridiculous like this, you know, Alex knows he can make a lot of money by being a partisan cheerleader. And that's become his business model with Donald Trump. He's nothing more than just a partisan cheerleader, a shameless liar. Shameless liar. COVID vaccine boosters are coming in mere weeks, writes the New American, after CDC and the FDA said it was too soon. This is the appropriate way to look at this instead of cheering Trump along. As see, Trump says it's all about the money. Yeah, he would know. The Biden administration is recommending that all Americans, regardless of their ages, receive COVID booster shots 8 months after their initial vaccine shots. Even those who got the Johnson & Johnson shot, which is a one shot and done, right? They require an additional shot as well. Because we've got to spread that money around. Come on. You're not going to hold all the profits yourself. You know, when Trump wanted to do business in New York, he did business with the mafia. You know, he built his skyscrapers out of concrete instead of steel like everybody else is doing because the mob had the concrete contracts. They made more money off of that. They made sure he had no labor problems. When he went to Washington, he just made deals with a different industry, pharmaceutical industry. In early July, less than 6 weeks ago, when Pfizer said that it was seeing waning immunity in those vaccinated with the Pfizer shots, and it was beginning to develop a booster, both the CDC and the FDA released a joint statement within hours, and they said, Americans who have been fully vaccinated do not need a booster shot at this time. Is it waning? Are there variants out there? Is it the bioweapon that is making everybody sick? Is it turns your body into a manufacturing plant for this harmful spike protein? That's exactly what it is. You know, we've had an opioid epidemic from big pharmaceutical companies, and that ran through this country for years. Still haven't tamped that down. But now they need a new profit center. They've got it with a vaccine. So now after our opioid epidemic, now we can have a vaccine epidemic. And that's what you're seeing now. You're not seeing a Delta variant. You're seeing a vaccine epidemic based on ruthless greed, on the contempt for human life, and just a corrupt hopelessly corrupt government and corporations. People who are fully vaccinated are protected from severe disease, they said at the time. This is the FDA and the CDC just 6 weeks ago. Including from variants currently circulating in the country, such as Delta. People who are not vaccinated remain at risk, they said. So they tried to push that. But as New American points out, the implication was very clear. Anything that sowed seeds of doubt about the efficacy of the vaccines was dangerous. People could read that the effectiveness of the vaccines is going to diminish over time, and they would rightfully conclude that not getting the vaccine at all was preferable to accepting them as a lifetime drug to be taken every few months for the rest of their lives. Now, just weeks after saying that it was too soon, the Biden administration is preparing to push the boosters with all the vigor that it pushed the vaccines in the first place. Trump now is, I have nothing to do with any of that. I did the good vaccines. The first two are really good, but that third one is nothing but greed and it's dangerous. But the first two are good. I take credit for that. I mean, how does this guy continue? Just unbelievable to me. We're talking about people being ignorant, unable to think critically. This is Trump, people like Alex Jones, preying on people who are ignorant, who are incapable of critical thinking. So the first two shots are really good, but the third one is bad, and it's nothing but greed, according to Trump and Alex Jones. Now, just weeks after saying it's too soon, now they're rushing this out. The only real competition that they have is natural immunity, so that has to be discredited. Except that a vaccine, if it were a vaccine, and it's not a vaccine, because what it does is it makes your body manufacture a toxic protein. So it's not a vaccine. A real vaccine trains your immune system. That's it. It doesn't address a disease at all. Not at all. So people, now we have, though, the Surgeon General has really not gotten the memo, I guess. This is the same guy who has just told us that you don't have the right to put out misinformation. The current Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy. And, you know, that you can break that statement down. You don't have the right to put out misinformation. Well, what that says, when anybody says you don't have the right, fill in the blank, what they're saying is that what is going to follow is a government-granted privilege. And so what he's saying is speech is a government-granted privilege. And then when he makes a contingent on misinformation, what he is saying is that the government will decide what speech is allowed. So speech is a privilege granted to the government, and they will decide what is true, and they will punish you accordingly. That's what he is saying. So the same guy who said that is now saying that people who get the two COVID shots are fully vaccinated and they don't need a booster. He said, I think what's very important for people to know is that if you've gotten both of your shots of mRNA vaccines, you are fully vaccinated right now. You have a high degree of protection against the worst outcomes of COVID-19. He said this on Wednesday, 2 days ago. Now, the question is he guilty of misinformation? Should he have his privileges taken away of being a Surgeon General? Who gets to decide what this is? And maybe, you know, he just has, he wasn't on the list to get the memo that they were doing a rapid about face on science. On science. Babylon Bee knows where this is going. Pfizer Plus. It is now a monthly booster subscription program. Pfizer, you know, it's like Disney Plus. You can now get Pfizer Plus. Pfizer Plus offers the following additional benefits. You can get a monthly vaccine booster. You can have access to some of Pfizer's other popular drugs. You get a gold badge that you can put on social media to virtue signal. You get a video library of mainstream media shaming any unvaccinated individuals. And not only that, but Pfizer Plus will also launch a new Super Premium Plus tier for consumers who just can't get enough of giant pharmaceutical companies. Included in that is an autographed photo of Dr. Fauci, a mobile app that alerts you when an unvaccinated person is nearby, and a monthly shipment of masks because you know your vaccine doesn't work. All this will be available for $5.99 per month as Pfizer has partnered with the IRS to extract the monthly fee from all taxpayers in the foreseeable future, because that's what really has happened. Put it on our tab, you know, the national debt, trillions of dollars that Trump signed us up for with his globalist takeover. He has the audacity to now pretend that he's against the third shot. Not the first two, but the third shot. Unbelievable. Truly unbelievable. Speaking of a monthly subscription, by the way, you can find out how to get your monthly subscription of the David Knight Show Plus. for whatever level you want to get in at Subscribestar. You'll find that at thedavidknightshow.com, as well as links to where the live broadcast is. And, of course, we're being carried now on APS Radio, as you hear with the commercials, also on Aftermath FM. That's where they carry the live broadcast of the news. And we'll be putting a direct link to the news portion of APS Radio on our website. We're also carried in terms of the video broadcast of the live show. We're still on Twitter, on Periscope. I don't know how much longer that's going to last. I thought that was going to end months ago. But we're on DLive. We're on Trovo. Those archives only last for a couple of days, and then they go away. But we have just been put into the beta test for Odyssey as well. And so in terms of live broadcasts, so we've been on Odyssey, and I've seen more growth on Odyssey than I've seen on other platforms. We've got a lot more people on BitChute, but that's kind of plateaued, whereas on Odyssey, it's really gone up quickly. And it is Odyssey seems like things upload and process there more quickly than they do on any of the other platforms that we're on. We're on BitChute, YouTube, Rumble as well. But on Odyssey, things are going up pretty quickly. And so now we are part of a beta test, and we really do appreciate them including us in that on Odyssey. And I don't know how that's going. I guess I think it's working now. Is it working now, Travis? I think you can go to Odyssey and go to our channel, and you'll find the link at thedavidknightshow.com. So you'll also be able to see the live broadcast there as it's happening. And we put up our archives on those four different channels, as well as the video the audio archive on podcasts. We have two different podcast sites. We have the Real David Knight Show, and then we have the older David Knight. It just says The David Knight Show, and those go out to every podcast venue except Spotify. They have pushed us off, just like PayPal and Venmo have pushed us off. So it's great to be adding for a change some of these new places, Aftermath, APS Radio, Odyssey, as we're kicked off of Spotify. I just have one more bit of news here from California before we take a break. This is from a listener, Kimberly. I've loved the title of this. It's a news report from California, and she calls it Caliban. I think that's the best summary of what is happening there that I've seen anywhere. She said, here's a screenshot from Ralph's grocery and pharmacy website. Given the information shared a few days ago regarding the intention of the vaccine being to reduce natural immunity, this banner is insidiously ironic. We're pleased to offer the third dose of Pfizer and Moderna to people with weakened immune systems. We are committed to you. We have flu, COVID-19, and more. Schedule your vaccine appointment today, because that's what this is always about, you know, getting your annual flu shot. Well, now it's even better. They can force you. They can coerce you by denying you travel, school, and work. They can coerce you to get the vaccine. And not only that, but to get it every couple of months. Isn't that great? I mean, Fauci's just amazing. And then sent a screenshot, said, I think YouTube is wasting Mike Lindell's money. Just thought you'd enjoy it. And what it was a picture of my website. And when you go there, they had an ad that they served for Mike Lindell's election investigation, where even Steve Bannon said he didn't produce any. There's no data here. You didn't show up with the receipts. What's going on? We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back to talk about the mandated Trump shots, to show you what is happening with the Caliban, because we have some new moves in California, as well as some healthcare professionals talking about, they keep talking about how they got shortages and they're overwhelmed. A lot of this is because they are firing medical professionals, because you got politicians and bean counters who are coercing them to get vaccinated. We'll be right back.
Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary.
but each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Whether you're feeling like the blues or bluegrass, APS Radio has you covered. Check out a wide variety of channels on our app at APSradio.com.
All right, and I was just given this by Karen. I had an email from Matt, and he said that he'd sent us a package, and he was very concerned that we had not received it yet. And so Karen went by to pick this up, and he sent several albums of Tower of Power. I really do appreciate this. As he's listened to me for many years, he knows that I like Tower of Power. I have one or two of these, but there are the most of these I do not have. So I really do appreciate that. And the reason that he sent it is very touching. He said last year, well, first of all, he says, I'm about 40 years old. I live in Sacramento, California. Been listening to you for about 7 years, starting at InfoWars. He said, last year, however, was a really hard year for my mom and I. My dad had been battling with severe anxiety and depression for many years. It got really bad for him when all the constant COVID fear-mongering from mainstream media began to appear. With the lockdown and all the BLM rioting going on across the country, my dad just couldn't take it anymore. It was too much for him to handle, and sadly, he ended up taking his life one early morning last summer. This all came as a massive shock to the whole family and friends. I'm so sorry to hear that. He says, I know my dad really could have used the Christian church that he had been going to for only 6 months before all this happened. It was one of the very few things that would bring my dad some joy. Growing up, I'd never once seen my dad go to church or read the Bible, so when he began to come along with my mom and I, it had seemed like my dad was beginning to get the Holy Spirit in him. I really believe that my dad had accepted the Lord Jesus Christ as his Lord and Savior. All that hope and feelings seemed to have gone away with him when almost all the churches shut down in California. All these churches that closed have really failed. My dad, along with many others, really needed some hope and communion in their life during the lockdown. If people can't see that we're in a spiritual war of good versus evil, then they're living in complete denial. Not long ago, my mom and I were going through my dad's record collection, and I found these Tower of Power albums. I know that you have mentioned that you're a fan of theirs. I would really like for you to have them. Hope that you will get some enjoyment out of them. I will. Thank you. I would also like you to know that my mom and I listen every day. And so, thank you. I'm so sorry that that happened this last year. That is from Matt. And, you know, in the very beginning of this, I remember talking to a pastor that was in Illinois. He was in a small town, and I saw him one morning before my show when I got in early. I would go into the break room to make coffee, and they would have Fox and Friends on. And they had this guy, this pastor from a small Illinois town on. And he was talking about how they were not locking down, they weren't going to, and, you know, wanting to sell pharmaceutical products, as Fox does, and wanting to sell the pandemic in order to sell the pharmaceutical products. They were kind of cutting this guy off in a lot of different respects. So I looked him up, and I got him on the show. And it was a great interview, and one of the things he was saying was, he said, this is, of all times, the time when the church needs to be there for people, when they're under this kind of stress. And So when I look at this, it really is a shame that so many of them value this short period of time on Earth so much that they would not do what they could to help other people or to even follow Christ. So it's very disappointing. But I would just say to Matt, you don't know that simply because he committed suicide, that is one of many sins. Yet all of our sins were in the future when Christ died for us. That's my understanding. That's my belief. And so if he accepted Christ, all of his sins were paid for regardless of what he did in the future. There could have been other things that were lost in this life, but and that is the consequence when things happen in our life that take us away from Christ. We lose those things that we could have done, rewards that would have been associated with that. But our salvation is based on grace and faith alone. And so thank you for this. As a matter of fact, I said I had a couple of these because a couple of these we had were in our repertoire, the band I was in. See, Bump City, that was a song we did back at Busch Gardens. Urban Renewal, What Is Hip. I miss doing those. I do not play them because I'm not really sure. I don't want to get into any, not being on a radio station. On a radio station, I can play that kind of stuff because they've got the license. But since I don't have a license, I try to shy away from it. So we've been kind of shy on music here based on what I would like to do. And I won't be doing any covers of Tower Power. They're just too unassailable, I think. I'll also point out on a personal note that many of you would like to know Travis, who is my producer and engineer here, his birthday is tomorrow. And so I'm going to give him the Saturday off. give him a little bit of a break here. Let's take a quick look at the mandated Trump shots. You know, we have a new ballot initiative in Arizona that is getting the Democrats very upset. It's called voter ID. And yet they want to require ID for everybody, right? Isn't that just the hypocrisy is just amazing. That's why we're at the point now where I say these things so that you understand, so people who are tuning in understand. I want you to understand what the situation is. I want to shore up your backbone. But we're beyond the point where we need to argue with these people. You know, I'm trying to tell you what's going on so you understand it, but these people are never going to understand, never want to understand. This is not something that, we're not going to have any voter ID, but we're going to have vaccine ID. And that's really what this has all been about. If you look at it, it's following a little bit different order than Bill Gates had laid out there. You know, he had ID 2020, and then he had Immunization Agenda 2030. Now, in a sense, it's a different order. You know, they're coming out, they're going to use the vaccine in order to make the case for an ID. But Immunization Agenda 2030 is, as they point out, everyone, everywhere, every age, vaccinated. And implied in that is that you get a vaccination for whatever they demand, without exception. And yet you've got medical professionals now being kicked out of their jobs because politicians, bureaucrats, accountants running hospitals are demanding that they get vaccines. Here is one nurse in California talking about how for 18 months she was a hero. They didn't mind her helping people in the hospital. But now you got to take the vaccine or hit the highway.
Hi, my name is Heather Cobble, and I'm a registered nurse here in San Diego. I actually resigned from my job yesterday as a registered nurse because of this state mandate to be vaccinated. I was no problem working in the healthcare system over the last 18 months without a vaccine. But now, all of a sudden, I'm a threat to public health? Tell me where this makes sense. All of you sitting up here with your masks on, you know that those masks don't do anything. As a healthcare provider, we are taught how to use PPE. We're taught universal precautions, and we know how to implement them when we're dealing with patients who have a viral infection. I don't understand how you guys don't see the bigger picture here. What you're doing is you're creating a healthcare crisis. We already have a nursing shortage in America. So now in San Diego County, I know for a fact there's several hospitals that are operating on an all-bed crisis. You know why we're doing that? Wilma, do you know why? Because we have a healthcare shortage, a healthcare nursing shortage, excuse me. And you know that. These numbers are skewed. The testing is skewed. This needs to stop. I don't understand. Nathan, you can't even look at anybody when they're up here speaking. It's so rude. So rude. And I do have to say one thing. Jim Desmond, I want to thank you personally because I have reached out to you over the last 18 months, and you are the only supervisor to ever respond to any one of my emails. So thank you. Thank you.
Well, you know, that's it. It's political. She said it was a state law. This is not medicine. This is not science. It's political, and it's about money. Yeah, at least Trump got that right about the boosters. That's all it is. It's about money. It was about money with the first two as well. This is from a listener saying, if you're interested in sharing, here are some resources for religious exemptions. And I would like to share this if I had a website, but again, we don't have the website up. So let me just kind of give you an idea of where some of these are. There is LC as in Lucy Charlie, lc.org/exempt. There's another one from Pastor Brandon Holthouse, the Rock Harbor Church in Bakersfield, California. Permission granted to share widely and publicly. There's a PDF. jdfarage.org/exemption. This is a Pastor Farage. That's F-A-R-A-G. F-A-R-A-G. He's working to make it downloadable and or available with a wet ink signature, he says, through an online request at his website. The listener said, and he works in a hospital situation. He said, the latest scuttlebutt is that our local nurse shortage is due to nurses migrating to hospital systems that aren't requiring the injection yet. It will be nationally. Children's Health Care of Atlanta was at the top of the list. Unfortunately, word just came out that they are now planning to mandate soon. Also, the talk around the office is the diversion status at St. Joe's last Saturday night was due to a severe nurse shortage, which is why they declared themselves full when they only had 16 patients in a 40-bed ER. Because they don't have the nurses. They don't have the beds. They don't have the nurses because they fired the nurses or the nurses quit because of the vaccine mandates. I foresee a perfect storm brewing when cold flu season hits this winter. And these immunocompromised, vaxxed individuals have the ADE issues. We're going to be in a world of hurt if we're already seeing a major bottleneck happening when it's just average call volume. Again, as we discussed yesterday with Joel Skousen, this is the middle of the summer. It's going to pick up. The United States is now facing, the United States is now facing a critical nursing shortage in hospitals, writes Vaccine Impact, as nurses are quitting rather than complying with the Trump shot mandates. That's my comment. They call them a COVID vaccine. Or being fired. Hospitals will soon be overwhelmed, not because of the outbreak of COVID, but because of critical care staffing depleted by the COVID shots. And that's what the listener just pointed out. They were done with just 16 beds out of 40. Sorry, we can't take anybody else. Why? Because they don't have any nurses because they fired them. Jennifer Bridges knew what was coming when her director at Houston Methodist Hospital called her up in June to inquire about her vaccination status, which was none of the hospital's business. Always in the past, we had laws even protecting medical privacy. Now they make it their business because they have overturned all of the laws, from the Constitution down to things like HIPAA. Bridges, a 39-year-old registered nurse, responded, absolutely not, when asked if she was vaccinated or had made an effort to get vaccinated, and so she was terminated on the spot. We all knew we were getting fired, she told CBS News. We knew unless we took that shot to come back that we were getting fired today. There was no ifs, ands, or buts. She was one of more than 150 hospital workers fired by Houston Methodist Hospital. All last year, through the COVID pandemic, we came to work and we did our job. Same thing you just heard Heather say in California. This is another nurse there at Houston Medical, Methodist, said Kara Shepherd, a labor and delivery nurse who joined Bridges and others in an unsuccessful lawsuit. We did what we were asked. This year, we're basically told we're disposable. And again, this lawsuit was just summarily tossed out by the judge because there is no justice in this country. The laws are gone. The regulations are gone. I mean, we had things like HIPAA. We had OSHA saying, yeah, if you work in some of these dusty environments, you must have your employees wear masks to protect their health. You know, just as Giuliani did not have people wearing masks when they went in to cover up 9/11 for him. But if you're wearing a mask, you can only wear that for a few minutes at a time, and you got to give people breaks. And so now we just waved all of that science and common sense aside to force children to wear them all day. 2 months after the firing of unvaccinated hospital staff, Houston Methodist is one of several area hospitals experiencing a severe shortage of medical personnel. Media reports say that the hospitals have reached a breaking point because of a flood of COVID-19 cases, but they have done it to themselves. Hit the breaking point because the nurses are disposable. That is exactly what is happening there. On Thursday, Oregon Governor Kate Brown announced that all health care and school workers in her state must be vaccinated by October the 18th or 6 weeks after full FDA approval of the vaccine, whichever is later. The vaccines currently are being administered under emergency use authorization. Now, that tells you that this Democrat governor has probably heard through the grapevine that the FDA is going to rubber stamp this in September. And I think they are. I think when we look at the Pentagram's demands about military personnel, saying that they're going to have it by September the 15th or earlier if the FDA approves it by then, I think it's pretty much in the cards that it's going to be sometime around September, October time frame that they're going to just dot the I and cross the T, as Fauci said, because this is all just a bureaucratic consideration. And they can waive their own rules about testing, just as OSHA has waived it, as HIPAA and others have waived it. They've waived the Constitution. They've waived the laws. They've waived their regulations. They've waived their science. They just do whatever they wish. It is a medical dictatorship. Again, absolutely amazing to me that I was attacked a year and a half ago for calling it a medical dictatorship. I was attacked in the left-wing press as somebody who's a wide-eyed, crazy, paranoid conspiracy theorist because I said it was a medical dictatorship. And we all can see what it is now. The Department of Veteran Affairs, the VA, will require nearly every worker, volunteer, and contractor within its vast health care system to be vaccinated, says the New York Times. And about 250 nurses, the University of Texas Medical Branch being kicked out. So as we look at this, what is the future? It's where I began the program. They want you at home. They want you in the metaverse. That's where the Pentagon, that's where DARPA, where the NSA, the CIA, these people who put the internet in place as a control tactic. It's where Wall Street wants you. It's where Silicon Valley wants you. They all want you at home. They want you in a little tiny compartment and contained so that you're no threat to them. They will give you what they want you to eat. They will give you access to video games to keep you from rising up against them, to pacify you. And then they will require, if you're, you know, you probably won't have access to this little metaverse unless you're a good little boy and girl and you take your vaccines, because, you know, we can't let you online unless you're vaccinated. You staying at home, says Reason Magazine, is the future that the unvaccinated punishers want. When it's been a good long while, you forget one of the primary benefits of travel, seeing and experiencing wholly different approaches to the same human problems that we contend with back home. He said, for my six-year-old, who was in France the first half of August, that meant mostly one thing. Kids of elementary school age in France never wear masks. Can we stay in France until coronavirus is over? She asked more than one time. He said, to be sure, that's not the French COVID policy that is making international headlines this summer, however. Nobody wants to talk about that, right? First time I've seen that children in France are not masked up. Everybody wants to talk about Macron and how he has thrown the French people on the barbed wire so that the globalist elitists can walk over them and get to the rest of us, right, to lay out these mandates. Macron announced that everybody in the country as of August 9th must show a government-issued pass sanitaire, a proof of either vaccination or a negative test within the past 72 hours to do anything, anything. Vaccine passports become increasingly popular policy response to the quote-unquote Delta. Of course, that's my putting that in air quotes. The New York Times subbed it this way. While such measures have prompted protests in France and divided Americans, Italians are enjoying a season of rationality under Prime Minister Mario Draghi. Mario Draghi. This is the guy who the central bankers a few years ago, he had situations in both Greece and in Italy. Nigel Farage called out Greece, which was the first one to do it. He said, here at the where democracy originated, you have overthrown a duly elected person and stuck in a technocrat. That's what they call these bankers. And that's what Mario Draghi was. They called him a technocrat. He's a banker. So they throw out the politicians and they install these technocrats. Again, nothing new. 50 years ago, you had Mika Brzezinski's father, Zbigniew Brzezinski, when he wrote Between Two Ages, he said the coming age is the technocratic age, and we will know everything that everybody is doing, and we'll know everything about them, and we will be ruled by technocrats. This is a kind of elitism that goes back to the 1930s, the technocracy and the rest of this stuff, that arrogance coming from people like Huxley, H.G. Wells, positing societies that were run by technocrats operating as dictators with their superior technology. You had Elon Musk's grandfather, Joshua Haldane, was arrested because he tried to overthrow the government of Canada. And he beat the rap and then beat it out of town and went to South Africa. But that's what these people are always about. That is the background of Elon Musk. That's why he's doing what he's doing. Papers, please. Requirements went into effect Monday in New Orleans and in New York City. San Francisco will join them today. California, I should say Caliban, announced yesterday that any public event larger than 1,000 attendees will need to check vaccine status as of September the 20th. Canada last week announced that proof will be required for all air, train, and boat passengers beginning this fall. The Washington put it up in a headline this week. Vaccines are mounting, and that's likely to affect your next trip. Reason writer says that is if you decide to take it at all. Imagine a federal government initiating and executing a national IT job and a related app affecting tens of millions of people in a couple of months. Obamacare exchanges, anybody? Because that's what this is. Should we call this Trump Care? Trump Care is a lot worse than Obamacare. Being called non-essential is a lot worse than being called deplorable. Of course, we're being called deplorable as well now. But you want to call it Trump Care, Biden Care, Obamacare? We can look back in hindsight and we can see that it's all just a continuum. That these clowns, these puppets that they put in office are just a distraction. They're just a con game to get our confidence up, thinking that things are going to be all different and better now. So that's what we're looking at. And as this writer correctly points out, This is very much like Obamacare, very much like the Obama administration. The French government is just nudging people, like Cass Sunstein talked about. So the idea of nudging people into desired behaviors, the tests that you're going to have to take, that'll be the next thing, right? Well, you know, we'll punish you with a test if you don't get vaccinated, and we'll make the tests more and more frequent. And then after a certain period of time, Macron says, we'll start charging you for the test. In France, that's going to be 49 euros per test. So you can now add that to the next increment. A no-fly list for unvaccinated adults is an obvious step that the federal government should take, wrote former Obama administration assistant secretary of Homeland Security, Juliette Kayyem, in The Atlantic this month. I've mentioned this almost every day because you need to pay attention to this. This is not just where the Biden and Obama administrations are. It's also really where the Trump administration was. They were complicit in all of this as well. We have to move, she said, from the carrots of luring people, talking to them about science, giving them extra pay, giving them lotteries. She said this on PBS. We have to move to a system of sticks where there will be burdens, where privileges will be denied, because in their view, everything is a privilege. Everything is a government-granted privilege. You have no individual rights or liberties. You're not created in the image of God. You're tolerated by an all-powerful government. At some point, he says, and this unhappy conclusion begins to coalesce, government nudgers don't want to just punish politically icky refuseniks. They'd be happy if I stayed home from the bar. They'd be happy if I stay home from the airport as well. They will continue calling the shots if we continue letting them. A 64-year-old heart patient removed from a transplant list for refusing a COVID vaccine. That's right. Vaccinate or die. We need to respond, live free or die. We should not hold life so dear that we will not push back for our liberty and for the liberty of our children and our grandchildren. So, live free or die. Do not let these people kill you if you don't take a vaccine. And that's what we're looking at here. University of Washington Medical Center. Remember, University of Washington was at ground zero pushing these lies pre-lockdown, before Trump signed that. I mean, they were, before you had the Imperial College of London, everybody was hanging on every word that was coming out of the University of Washington. So the University of Washington Medical Center has taken a man off of a transplant wait list because he refuses to take the vaccine. The man was told in June that his heart transplant surgery was on the line over his refusal to take the jab after waiting in line for more than 2.5 years. If he changes his mind, however, he could be added back to the wait list if he satisfies their, quote, compliance concerns, unquote. They're demands. They're holding a gun to this guy's head, and they're telling him, you take the vaccine or we're going to let you die. I won't go into all, he's got a long list of heart issues here. But the doctor called him after they'd had a disagreement over mask use. Because with all these heart issues that this guy has got, a lot of them, is why he's on the transplant list, with all these issues, they want to put a mask on him. That's why I said, you know, when you look at these kids that were given heart attacks by the vaccines, and they can't deny it for the healthy kids playing sports, they can deny it for anybody else that it was the vaccine, but they can't deny it for these kids. This is not something that's just affecting healthy kids, believe me. And he knows that. And yet when I saw that picture, I saw a kid who suffering a heart attack, myocarditis and an accompanying heart attack, and he will have heart issues the rest of his life. I saw the picture of him, and he's sitting in a bed with a mask on. I said, this is just absolute insanity to put a mask on somebody who's got heart issues. That's one of the key things with a heart attack. You're having trouble breathing. And so you're going to put a mask on them? This is malpractice. It is financially incentivized malpractice. It has been financially incentivized malpractice for 524 days since Trump signed that order. He said the cardiologist, so I had a discussion about the mask. And so then the cardiologist, oh, I'll get this guy, calls me up after that. We had a discussion and he informed me, well, you're going to have to get a vaccination before you can get a transplant. And I said, well, that's news to me. Nobody's ever told me that before. And he says, yeah, that's our policy. A few days later, he says he received a letter dated June 7th informing him that he'd been pulled from the United Network for organ sharing, waiting for a heart. I am most put off, he said when he wrote them a letter, not by your decision to remove me from the list, thereby removing any opportunity to live out my life at a near normal level, but by the lack of scientific logic that dictates your policy. He says, as a person who spent a lot of time and money at this hospital, as a heart failure patient, I am being told that I cannot get care for my condition unless I take an injection that has been shown to have cardiac problems, to cause cardiac problems. It seems that a wise choice would be to not make a panic move and run to get injected with the experimental gene therapy until more is known. Meanwhile, another vaccine-hesitant patient, Derek Kovic, wrote that he has been informed that he also will need to get a vaccine before he can get a necessary liver transplant. When reached for comment, hospital spokeswoman said that they had just recommended that all solid organ transplant candidates be vaccinated against COVID-19. Why would they make that demand? Why would they make that demand? It makes no sense. It's just greed and control. Our physicians, she said, make a determination regarding vaccine recommendations and requirements, including COVID vaccination, based on the risk factors of the individual patient and the degree of immunosuppression that they will experience. Look, this is to require a heart patient to get something where this protein spike, more than anything else, it creates cardiovascular and circulatory issues. Absolutely. It's just malpractice. Double jabbed are just as likely to spread the Delta variant as the unvaccinated, according to a new study. And, of course, this study is coming out of Oxford University. They are the people who developed what is now called AstraZeneca. It was the Oxford vaccine. Bill Gates got in with a company, AstraZeneca, to market it to make a profit. But it was developed by Oxford University. And I pointed this out as well. Researchers suggest herd immunity is unachievable. Although fully vaccinated people are significantly less likely to be infected, those who do get COVID have a similar viral load as the unvaccinated. That means that this is coming from the Oxford vaccine people. This means that infected people shed the same amount of virus when they cough or sneeze, regardless of whether or not they've been jabbed. So why would you do this in order to stop the spread? They can't keep up with their own lies. It's not possible. Say scientists, jab people cleared the infection quicker. Oh, yeah? Well, they say it is possible that jab people clear the infection quicker. They say it's possible. They don't know. They haven't done any tests. This is not proven. This is projection. This is marketing. Marketing. Three senators have now announced positive COVID-19 tests in just a single day. See? This is the pandemic, next section of the pandemic is the vaccine. Roger Wicker, Republican Mississippi, Angus King from Maine, and John Hickenlooper. See, it's bipartisan, but it's also bi-injectional. You get two shots, doesn't matter which political party you're in, you get sick. You get sick. Delta is surging, but another variant is on the way? Well, here's what we need to know about Lambda, they say. This is being pushed now, you know, by the mainstream media, by Washington Post. So be very afraid. You know, whatever happened to Gamma? I guess that was the Incredible Hulk variant. They didn't want to talk about that. Well, they did say they did have Alpha, Beta, and Gamma before they had Delta. So maybe they're going through the Greek alphabet. I don't know. Epsilon, Mu, Nu. What are we going to do? You know, I preferred it when, Delta was just referring to Animal House. Remember the good old days? When the Greek letters just referred to crazy fraternities. And now what we have is we've got people who have graduated, perhaps the same kind of out-of-control people that you saw depicted in Animal House. Now they're running the country. They're running the hospitals. They're running the political institutions. And now it's Delta everywhere. So now we've gone from a Delta House to a Delta Nation. and again, this is coming out of University of Connecticut, talking about Delta House, Animal House. They're going to fine and then block internet access to unvaxxed students at Quinnipiac University. I've never heard of Quinnipiac except in polls. I wonder if they took a poll first before they put this new policy in. But no, you can be fined up to $2,272 as a student. You can lose your internet access if you fail to comply. Not only that, but because it's Delta, they can put you on double secret probation. Yeah, really. Except it's not a secret what they're doing here. Here again, we can see the nudge aspect. Boiling the frogs slowly. Those not in compliance by September 14th will begin to face $100 a week fines. With increases of $25 every 2 weeks, up to a maximum of $200 per week, up to a maximum of $2,275. And then they will also cut you off of the school's Wi-Fi. See, the problem is when you have invested in a school, you've invested a lot of time and money. And whenever you transfer, and I know this is a fact because I transferred two different schools, two different majors. I started out as a music major, then I went into accounting, and then I went into engineering. And so every time I would change majors and change schools, it's like, boom, start all over again. Wipe it all out. And that's why this is such a big deal, because these people have invested a lot of time and a lot of money today and their college tuition, and now these colleges have just unilaterally changed the terms of service. That's why people don't just pack up and go. That's happening across the country. This article we don't have time to talk about. Rhodes College in Memphis, $1,500 fine if you're not vaccinated. West Virginia Wesleyan College, $750 fine if you're not vaccinated. They are relentlessly moving in this direction. And we need to stop arguing with these people. We need to start organizing. We need to start organizing a parallel society. We need to start making common cause with people who have been kicked out of their jobs so that we can have a full complementary society, whether we operate this thing on barter because they kick us off of their digital central bank currency or whatever we do. We've got to start making connections with other people who are like-minded and start to put together things that are going to be complementary services. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. Have a good weekend. And again, happy birthday to Travis tomorrow.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country, as well as our family.